Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh boy, Monday. Here we go again. I've just been going over some articles. I'm trying to get rid of articles because when I have too many articles, my computer gets messed up. But there's things that I want to lose. So I have this constant war with myself of how many articles can I leave live and how many, you know, can I put away and still get the show done. It's going to be a busy week. We've got some amazing things happening. First of all, it sucks that April 1st was on a Saturday because, you know, I'd love to do a bunch of fake stories for you and not tell you. And I can't do it this year because it was 2 days ago. Nobody cares. You can't do, you know, fake stories on April 3rd. That's just stupid. And of course, next year, April 1st is going to be 2024. Wait a minute. Next year is a leap year. So maybe April 1st is going to be on a Monday because we're going to add an extra day on February 28th. Is it 28th? Yeah, I guess we get a February 20 or 29th. I think we get a February 29th. Yeah, I'm not good at numbers. I'm just not. This is why I write and talk because no. Anyway, so if that's the case, especially 2024, I'm going to give you a bunch of fake stories. I'm not going to tell you. They're going to be just they'll seem real. They'll seem plausible. You know, especially to those of you that love a good conspiracy, but they're not going to be real. So I'll leave it at that. I had several things in mind that I thought. Saturday, of course, all this stuff comes to mind, right? I'm thinking, damn. It's April 1st and it's a Saturday. And, you know, of course, friends are posting all kinds of joke memes. And I have a friend that does nothing but joke memes. It's great. So it's really fun to see. So that's what's happening there. The Skype line is working, apparently. At least I hope so. So if you want to try calling in internationally, the only time you can do that is during the show because you call in online and then it's forwarded directly to the studio here. The studio being my computer screen. I run the whole thing on an iMac, literally worldwide. This is why I love technology today. You know, I get to run a worldwide radio show from an iMac, sitting here at my desk in my cottage, you know, somewhere in the along the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River, you know, here in Milton, Florida. So that's kind of cool. I mean, it's amazingly cool. We have everything we need to take our country back, literally, and basically reset our founding. Oh, I kind of like that. Reset our founding. So what do I mean to that? Reset our founding. That's kind of profound, actually. Yeah. I have my moments, you know what I mean? So when I say reset our founding, in other words, I want to use all the technology we have today, social media, the internet, everything, and turn us back to the founding where we had the original laws, the Constitution, and the basic laws before Marbury versus Madison, the courts, before the year that basically killed our freedom, 1913, with the Federal Reserve Act, the federal income tax, and taking the state's votes away for senators and giving it to lobbyists. And I said that particularly because when I talked to the Trump campaign, which I hope to actually fairly soon, is that one of the things that we propose, me, Action Radio proposes, hopefully I have your support, but let me know if I don't. I mean, it's quite all right, is that they repeal or rescind that amendment which took the votes away from the states and gave them to the people in a democracy, which basically means giving them to the lobbyists, the money, and the elite. That was the whole point of taking the votes away from the states. So it has to be framed in that argument. You have to be able to say to people who would vote for this in the states, it's like, look, we're not taking the votes from the people. The lobbyists already did that. You lost your vote. As soon as the states lost their vote, all that happened was that transferred voting from the state legislatures in Congress so that they could protect the citizens of their state in Congress from the federal government. So you lost all your protection of your states, and they made it worse because they gave your vote to the lobbyists because that's who has the money and that's who influences Congress. So as soon as Congress became representative of the lobbyists, they lost the ability to represent the people. And the states lost the ability to protect the people from the federal government. That's one of there's three checks and balances. You know, there's a bunch of checks and balances. The first check and balance is the House of Representatives, which is elected by the people by congressional district. You know, and we find that out through a census, making sure that the illegal aliens aren't counted. Oh, did that not happen last time? I'm sorry. Anyway, so that's the first protection. The second protection of the people is the Senate, which is represented by the states. So the people are represented by the House. The states are represented by the the senators, and that was a protection on the people so that the lobbyists didn't control both houses of Congress, all right, so like they do now. So that's why the Senate has to be elected by state legislatures again, which is not to say the state legislatures aren't controlled by lobbyists too. It's not a big system, but it's better to have the states have representation in Congress. Because what do they say? Taxation without representation is tyranny. So the federal government is taxing the states, you know, but they have no representation in Congress. Well, that's tyranny, obviously. You know, check my article on Substack, The Nation of Governments. It's an article that portrays Washington, D.C. As its own country, with the states as colonies whose job it is to feed the Leviathan of the nation of government with endless tax dollars and to okay their endless debt, which will eventually kill this country. Who knows when? Nobody knows. But there will reach a point where the debt exceeds our ability to pay the interest on the debt. And at that point, we're dead. The economy just dies. It may come sooner than that with the U.S. dollar not being the currency of choice in like the petrodollar and the international agreements. Of course, the other is this whole idea of a cashless society. I'm not as worried about that. Because there's a lot of folks around the world that really like cash. And so, well, let's see what happens. Let's see if cooler heads will prevail. But those are the big problems. But the single biggest thing that we need to do, if you want to fix the government and the economy at the same time, is you get out there our constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. When you take away the power of Congress to borrow money, the national debt freezes and then starts down as the bonds are paid off. Well, as the bonds are paid off and it comes down, if the government isn't printing money, then the money supply becomes stable. But when it becomes stable with increasing wealth and increasing GDP, the value of the dollar goes up. As the value of the dollar goes up, prices go down because the dollar is worth more. So it can buy more stuff. So what it used to cost $2 to buy, you can buy for $1. So you basically doubled your money. You know, once we start doing that, then you have what's called deflation, which is the savior of the economy. Deflation, which the Fed doesn't want to talk about, deflation is what will save us economically, because the more the prices deflate and the more the dollar increases, the more valuable your labor becomes, the more valuable your property becomes. Well, that's a good thing. And of course, the globalists will say, well, it's going to be bad for exports or imports. Well, screw that. I don't care. You know, I want a prosperous country. Well, let the international folks figure out the rest of the world. That's their problem. But all these things are good. And see, the Fed says, well, we need 2-3% inflation per year. Why? Why would you inflate? Why would you take 2-3% of people's money? Where do you think that money goes? Where do you think the value of that money goes? If your money loses 2-3% per year, who gets that value? Well, the Fed, the private banks get it. 2-3% of your money they steal per year by law because they're allowed to write the laws. Well, that's crazy. So if you have 2-3% deflation, that means you're getting more and more of the power of your money back, and the Fed and the private banks and the people that control our economy are losing it. Because then you can abolish the Fed because they have no purpose. The purpose of the Fed is to raise interest rates to stop inflation from all the money that the Congress is borrowing. Well, if the Congress isn't borrowing money, you don't need a Fed. There's no reason for it because the money supply will be relatively stable. So then the real secret, here's the kicker, this is going to be even more fun, is that the Congress should be pulling out $5 trillion a year from the economy, or $3 trillion or $2 trillion. They should be pulling out several trillion dollars per year, just burning it. Take that money out of circulation. Well, the more money that comes out of circulation, the more valuable each dollar becomes. That's another way to increase money. So Congress, burn money, literally burn it. Take it out of circulation. With fewer dollars out there, they become worth more, just like gold and diamonds. I mean, what's the difference, right? Anyway, so that's a little rambling that I wasn't even intending to make because there's so much else to talk about. Again, this is going to be a busy, busy day here at Action Radio. So we covered April 1st. That's unfortunate. Let's talk about the deplorable lack of coverage of the Clinton government massacre in Waco, Texas, where Trump just spoke, a week ago Saturday? He was just there. And everybody, including the Texas lieutenant governor, said, well, the fact that Trump is speaking in Waco has nothing to do with the Waco government massacre in Waco. Really? What, do you think I'm stupid? Of course it does. But he didn't say it. So that was kind of like, I think, a subtle message, but I think it was too subtle. Way too subtle. So Trump goes to Waco, doesn't speak about the Waco massacre of the Clintons, which he should have done because Hillary's probably going to want to run again. And where was Obama during the Waco massacre? I don't know. I know where Hillary Clinton was. She was first lady. you know, probably encouraging Bill to start the fires as soon as possible, given how she's treated the rest of America, you know, as the terrorist in chief, you know, the domestic half of the secret government. You know, she's the one, I'm sure, behind Merrick Garland, behind all the prosecutions, persecutions of Republicans, of school parents at school board meetings. The D.C. gulag, persecution of people who visited the Capitol during the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in January 6th, that just absolutely reeks of Hillary. That is so Hillary, I can't tell you. So that's what I think she's doing. The other half of the secret government would be Barack Obama. And what's he doing? Well, he's giving $85 billion worth of our best weapons to the Taliban and the Muslim world because, after all, he is a Marxist Muslim, which they go together very well because they're both authoritarian dictatorships. You know, one a theocracy and the other a state dictatorship. A dictatorship is a dictatorship. They don't change, right? So now you got Obama. He's the one that's doing that. He's the one that's bringing in hundreds of thousands of people from Afghanistan and around the world. He's the open borders guy. So he would be the one most in charge of flooding this country with a peasant class that can be dominated and put on welfare, and vote Democrat. Of course, what they haven't figured out yet, because they're idiots, is how they're going to pay for all this. How are they going to pay for all these illegals that don't want to work and want to sit on welfare? You know, because the American working people, you know, the jobs that Americans won't do, one job that Americans won't do is pay for you know, 20 million illegals, new illegals. So it's bad enough we're paying for the illegals that are already here. And so one of the things we need to do is create a situation of civil asset forfeiture on a local, on a county, state, well, city, county, state, and federal level. Federal is not going to be for a while, but certainly city, county, and state. Of seizing the assets of illegal aliens so that they leave. You say, look, we're going to start seizing assets. And of course, the left is going to go crazy. You can't do that. Well, yeah, we can. There's no law that says you can. Yeah, there is. It's called being a criminal. Anybody's a criminal, you can seize their assets. So you start seizing the assets of millions of illegal aliens. Trust me, the other millions will leave because they're going to want to keep their stuff. They're not stupid either. They're just corrupt. Big difference. If you came to this country to get welfare as an illegal alien, you know, then look at the DACA people. DACA, they said, well, they came here as children. Yeah, well, they stayed as adults. Okay, so the fact that they stayed as adults makes them just as criminal as people who came here as adults. What's the difference? All right, so that's a way to handle that. All right, what else we got going on here? Big announcement. Ed Dowd. Ed Dowd, who wrote the book Cause Unknown, all about the so-called secret deaths, you know, between 2021 and 2022. It's not secret at all. It's the vaccine. So he documented that. He's going to be here Thursday. So Thursday, we're starting the show 1 hour late. And the reason I'm starting the show an hour late is because Ed Dowd is going to be on at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central Time, right after CJ's Wellness Watch. So CJ's on at 9. Ed Dowd is on at 10. I'm starting the show at 8 a.m. Central Time. Well, I get two open hours anyway. It's not like, you guys are flooding me with people begging to do reports, which is okay. I mean, radio is intimidating. I understand that. But I'm open. I'm always open to new reports. You got an idea? You know, I mean, I can find you, which I usually do. But you can always contact me and say, I've got a great idea for a report. I want to do butterflies in Saskatchewan, Canada. Okay, cool. You know, that's worth an hour. You know, I want to do it every week. No, we're not going to talk about butterflies in Saskatchewan every week. I'm sorry. I mean, as much as it might fascinate you. You know, they got a short growing season anyway up there for butterflies. But that's the kind of thing. You know, I don't care how weird the topic is. If I'm interested, I'll put it on the air. If I'm not interested, I won't. You know, well, Greg, what gives you the right to do that? I don't know. I waited 40 years to be able to have a talk show where I could do what I wanted. So, yeah, that's what it does. All right. So Ed Dowd's coming on. And, of course, I want to talk to him about our vaccine product legislation. I'll tell Dr. Judy Mikovits probably about that as well, and see, because she was on Friday for like 3 hours almost, talking about some pretty incredible stuff, you know, and just the fact that we've had a vaccine liability bill for 2 years and it hasn't passed. So maybe we can recruit Ed, especially the fact that wouldn't it be really great if we got Robert Francis Kennedy on too? I'll talk to Judy. I'll see what I can do. All I can do is ask, you know. But if we get Ed Dowd on our side in terms of vaccine product legislation, liability legislation, and our big tech bill and censorship, and he'd be the one to know. I mean, he's a Wall Street analyst. He's like Jack Webb of Dragnet, just the facts. Tell me exactly what the facts are, and that's what I'm going to deal with. And that's what he does. He's an analyst. You know, he's got a brilliant mind. He's a math guy. He's a numbers guy. He deals in numbers. He deals in reality. He doesn't make wild speculations like, you know, me. but it's from those wild speculations that people start investigating the numbers. So you got to start somewhere. So it's up to us creative folks to inspire the number crunchers to look at the right set of numbers. And that's how we do it. Okay. Main topic for this hour. Well, no, we'll see. I advised Donald Trump in a recent Substack article, not that he takes my advice directly, maybe one day. My advice is don't go to New York. It's a trap. Nothing good can come out of going to New York. It's hostile territory. It's enemy territory. They hate him there. And because they hate him and because they're so prejudiced against him, I would say that's reason enough not to go. Well, Greg, he's been indicted. Nobody's above the law. Well, that includes Alvin Bragg, the DA. He's not above the law either. This is prosecutorial misconduct. So what I would do if I were Trump is I would say, no, I'm staying in Florida. If you want to, you can file this arrest all you want, but we're going to challenge it on the grounds that get a what do they call that? Summary judgment. I'll ask Jonathan about the next hour. Summary judgment, which is like, no, you know, that's a bogus charge. It's a false accusation. You know, prove this accusation's, you know, valid. Prove that you have some evidence to do this. Well, it was heard by a grand jury. What, of Manhattan people? Oh, please. They all voted for Biden. And even if they didn't, the Democrat Party would have changed their votes to Biden. Because, you know, so I mean, you think that's a fair trial? So who's the jury of, besides, you're supposed to be judged by a jury of your peers. You mean to think that you're going to tell me that grand jury in New York was a jury of Trump's peers? Of course not. They were a jury of Trump's enemies. It's just like the what's going on in D.C. right now, the D.C. gulag. I'm so happy to see everybody else calling it the D.C. gulag. Just to let you know, as far as I know, it was heard here first on Action Radio, because I called it the D.C. gulag as soon as people started being arrested. And so, you know, so they're catching on. So all those in D.C. gulag, do you think they, you know, all those convictions of people that are in there, you think they got a jury of their peers? You think they even got a jury? Probably not. Maybe some did. A lot of them got administrative judges. So they went to a judge's hearing, think they might get better. And they were forced to plead, guilty to lesser charges so they wouldn't get greater charges. Well, that's BS too. That should be illegal as well. You can't tell somebody, well, you better take this lower charge or we're going to charge you with a higher charge. Oh, wait a minute. Either the higher charge is valid or it's not. If it's not valid, you say, screw you. No, I'm not going to plead to a lower charge just so you know, instead of a higher charge. That's extortion. That's not justice. That's not due process. I'm still waiting for my FBI address, arrest. So FBI, KGB, if you're listening, like I say, just call me in advance so I can make coffee and we can talk. But if you have to haul me away, then I'm not taking a lesser charge. I'll tell you right now, I would never plead guilty to something I didn't do. I might ask them to plead guilty to something they're doing. I don't know, false arrest, things like that. But I certainly will not plead guilty to something I did not do. And so that's just the way it is. So I'll tell you right now, you know, go ahead. You can arrest me, throw me in jail, do all that kind of stuff. I mean, I can't stop them. They got more guns. And they got more of them. And they would call the tanks and the National Guard and Hillary Clinton. And they turned my place into Waco. Yeah, so I don't want that to happen. But on the other hand, I'm not going to plead guilty to a lesser charge. I'm just not. So I'll tell you right now, don't even try. It's not going to get you anywhere. I don't care. All right. So the whole idea of Trump, you know, pleading to this or Trump, you know, going to New York, is crazy. Now, the Secret Service, I've heard, is not going to let him be handcuffed, which is good. Otherwise, they would. This is all about visual stuff. And I post something in Facebook a little while back that this is all a trap. I said, this is not designed to put Trump in jail. What this is designed to do is the same thing that the impeachments were designed to do, which is stop Trump from campaigning and getting his issues out there. They want to take away his story. That's what this is about. They want to take away Trump's story. All right. So the best way to take away Trump's issues, Trump's stories, Trump's rallies that are incredibly successful because Brandon doesn't hold rallies because nobody shows up. That ought to tell you something. So you're telling me the man that beat the most popular president since Ronald Reagan and one of the most popular presidents ever was beaten by a mentally degrading, and I'm sorry for that, but it's true, mentally degrading senior citizen who, sits on his rocking chair watching the sunsets eating ice cream? Are you telling me he's the one that beat Donald Trump? I don't think so. Okay. Even a logical face, that makes absolutely no sense. So I'm looking for an article that I wrote. Here we go. So I'm going to get this in just a little bit. I try and multitask here. So I have my right hand on the mouse, left hand on the keyboard, you know, my eyes on my live chat, I'm in my mouth engaged in talking. This is multitasking, right? Because I do it all. So left hand's on the keyboard, right hand on the mouse. All right, there we go. Yeah. So I don't have foot pedals yet, but that's the only thing left. I'll work on that. So there's no reason for Trump to go to New York. Again, I would countersue. I would ask for a summary judgment. I would have a battery of lawyers go and say, we're going to go in Trump's place. And what we're going to do is charge you, Mr. District Attorney, with false arrest, prosecutorial misconduct, playing pure politics. And no, we're not going to have Trump show up. So, and then, of course, the next step is they said, well, we're going to go to New York and we're going to go get him. And this is when Ron DeSantis steps in and says, well, you know what? You got to get past the Florida National Guard. We're not going to let you do that. So you people, all you're trying to do is play politics. You don't want Trump running against you because he's the only one that's going to take away all your unjustly usurped powers, the deep state. He's the only one that's going to do that because he's the only one that doesn't need the money of the deep state. And, you know, for all the things I like about Ron DeSantis, and there are many things I really like about Ron DeSantis as governor. If he wants to become president, he's going to have to suck up to the money, the donors. And that's going to be his downfall. Because he will compromise his principles because he'll have to because he'll need the money to run. Well, anybody that needs the money to run enough to compromise their principles shouldn't be running. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean only rich people can run? For now, it appears that way. But what we need is an independent funding source that gives people the money to run and doesn't tell them how to run, which is a conflict to human nature. Because if someone gives you a whole bunch of money, they're going to want you to spend it their way. That's just the nature of politics. Why do you think there are lobbyists? Why do you think there are lobbyists for Big Pharma, you know, having the non-vaccines out there, killing people and injuring people, and Congress doesn't pass liability? Well, because they get too much money from it. So they're willing to kill people for money. Well, what's the difference between that and, killing for hire? What's the difference between a mafia hit person and a member of Congress who's taking money to kill people? What's the difference? I don't see any. And yet that's what's going on. So these people, these radical leftists, we have to break the left. In fact, we have to actually remove the left as a political force in this country. We have to defeat them electorally. We have to cheat better than they do, you know. We have to do all the things we can to basically disempower the left. It's the only thing, you know, to save this country. In fact, I wrote an article. I'll maybe I should do that one too at some point soon again. You know, if there were no left. So if there were no left in America, what would it look like? Well, there'd be no gun control. There'd be no government education. There'd be no wokeism. There'd be probably no Federal Reserve, no federal income tax. There'd be a lot of things. We wouldn't be a democracy. You wouldn't hear that all the time because democracy is the road to tyranny. There's a bunch of things we wouldn't have. And we wouldn't have illegal aliens. We wouldn't have a national debt. We wouldn't have tons of things. You know, you wouldn't have political correctness. You wouldn't have wokeism. You wouldn't have big tech doing all the things they're doing to censor people. You wouldn't have judges advocating, you know, radical social policy. We'd be a pretty decent place. And so that's why I say what we really need to do is reset our founding. In other words, take the founding principles of the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and actually use them today and get rid of the laws that don't apply. Get rid of the departments that don't apply, that aren't covered by that. Get rid of Marbury versus Madison, stop judicial review, turn the courts back to what they're supposed to be, handling cases, get the states back into Congress by abolishing the 17th Amendment, remove the federal government's ability to tax anybody. You know, the only place the federal government should get money is from the states. You know, and then reset our founding. That's basically what we need to do. Okay, let me get you an article as I'm going along here. I'll take a break in a little bit. I want to get through. This is probably a good thing to cover now. So I wrote this back on March 30th, a whole, 4 days ago? I tend to write a lot. And I'm trying to alternate, you know, an older article of mine that I want to get, you know, put somewhere so people can find it, you know, because the articles, when you put an article on the website like American Thinker, Canada Free Press, Intellectual Conservative, great websites, by the way. I love those websites. But your article goes in once and it's gone. I mean, people can find it in the archives, but, you know, I'd rather have it in my Substack so people can find it immediately. So our article 4 days ago, I think it was the night or maybe the day after, I heard that Trump was being indicted bogusly by a Soros district attorney, a leftist, who's carrying out basically a political clandestine operation that we happen to know, we happen to see. So it's called the Action Radio Response, Rapid Response to Trump's Bogus Indictment. And the subheading, the following steps should be accomplished immediately. I wrote this March 30th. Then I put a quote. I actually made up a quote and put my own name on it because I can. I said, when your enemy engages in completely illegal actions under cover of law for purely political purposes, it is not your duty to comply, but rather to resist, to preserve the law. So in other words, my contention is that Trump, in order to preserve the law, to preserve not the rule of law, because I don't believe in that. The law does not rule. The people rule. This is a country of we the people, not we the laws. Okay? Because people manipulate the laws. Laws are tools of oppression at times, depending on who's creating them. So it's not the rule of law. It's the rule of we, the people, who consent to certain laws. See, this is the difference with Action Radio. So our mission here is that we, the people, give our consent to be governed through actually writing the laws by which we are governed. And here's the second part, have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. That's what it's all about. It's pretty simple. But for Trump to preserve the law, he has to resist this. That's my contention. I'll ask Jonathan. Hopefully Jonathan's listening. I mean, he's a busy guy, so you never know. He probably does, you know, legal briefs before he gets here, and then all kinds of other stuff afterwards. And, you know, and then because he's a busy guy. Anyway, all right, okay, so I'll take that. Yep, just quick messages come in. I have to get messages periodically just to make sure somebody isn't saying, hey, Greg, you're not broadcasting. What? Don't tell me that. Apparently we are broadcasting, which is good. All right, got a couple folks. Calman is back on live chat, hasn't sent us a message yet. And hopefully Marco will check in from the Netherlands here pretty soon. He's like our European contact. And anybody else who wants to check in around the world, you know, depending on your time, now's the time to do it. So live chat's a great way to get a message to me directly. Anyway, so that's it. So I wrote this quote, when your enemy, that would be the left, when your enemy engages in completely illegal actions under cover of law, in other words, you know, because they're saying they're law enforcement, that would be district attorneys, police, local police, state police, you know, federal police that have no constitutional justification. There's no justification for the FBI in the Constitution. There's no authorization. There's no authorization for any federal bureaucrat to be armed. And I'm not talking about the military. Military is different. Military is this whole separate category. I mean, obviously, they have to be armed. They can't defend the nation unless they're armed. I mean, get real, all right? But bureaucrats, there is no constitutional provision for any bureaucrat to be armed. So the FBI, I don't mind if the FBI exists as an information service and helping the states with, you know, fingerprints, DNA, labs, you know, profiles on serial killers, things like that. That's okay. But what they can't do, you know, what they can't do is carry guns and enforce laws, because there's only three laws the Constitution allows for the federal government anyway: treason, piracy, and counterfeiting. Well, treason is in time of war, giving aid and comfort to the enemy. That can be handled by the U.S. Marshals. Piracy, well, that's on the high seas and now the air. That's the Navy and the Air Force. And counterfeiting, well, that's handled by the Secret Service. So the only two agencies that can be armed in the federal government constitutionally are the U.S. Marshals and the Secret Service. We need to disarm everybody else, all 287,000 armed bureaucrats. Okay? And that's, why do we do that? To preserve the law. So in other words, by defying these authorities, these leftist authorities, we're actually preserving the law. We're preserving the Constitution. So I'll say again my quote, when your enemy engages in completely illegal actions under cover of law for purely political purposes, it is not your duty to comply, but rather to resist, to preserve the law. So if Trump wants to preserve the law, he has to resist this. Don't go to New York. Don't show up. Don't let them photograph you. Don't let them perp walk. Don't do mugshots. You know, you can see mugshots on every campaign for the next year and a half. Don't do it. It's completely bogus. Make them justify what they're doing, okay? And they can't. So this is, go ahead. You know, let's send this up to the court of public opinion first. Let's get a jury. Let's see who's on that grand jury. You know, let's do what the left always does. Let's release the transcripts. Let's see what really happened there. Well, it's a secret proceeding. Really? Like Trump's phone calls that they impeached him on? Tell me about it. All right. So here's what I wrote. Well, actually, they have a nice little thing here, just in case you missed it. Substack does this, and it says, Greg Penglis, Action Radio Citizen Legislature, I guess that's me, is a reader-supported publication. To receive new posts and support my work, I guess they're saying this about me, consider becoming a free or paid subscriber. Yeah, let me just put that in there. I mean, free subscribers are welcome. I mean, I do a lot of free subscriptions because I'm poor. But that'll change one day, as soon as we come out from the suppression of big tech. But a paid subscription would really help right now. So if you want to Action Radio, help me do what I do, help all of us do what we do, then please consider a paid subscription to Substack at gregpenglis.substack.com. All right, so let me go through these points, take a break, and then we'll get Jonathan at the top of the hour. Well, maybe I'll take a break right now. Yeah, let's do it right now. It's 7:29. This would be a good time to do that. Let me just put a little note to myself here. This helps me. Now that I've started taking these little notes, it makes my show notes so much easier. When I do at the end of the show, sort of like when we do things and when we talk about stuff. Okay, be back in just a little bit. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly.
few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Pankless Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Grace Care. And now as an affiliate of Grace Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Grace Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gracecare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Grace Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Pengliss. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Pengliss. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Live here, Greg Pengliss, Action Radio, broadcasting worldwide from the
the wonderful, beautiful, historic district of Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River here on the Gulf Coast of Florida, northwest corner up in the Panhandle. Matt Gaetz's district, and it was interesting watching a special with Matt, my congressman here, on One American News. They have like half an hour. So I'm thinking, geez, if they can take my congressman for half an hour, and he knows me, you know, he hasn't been on the show for a while, but he really knows who I am because we've talked enough times that maybe I can entice him to direct One American News our way. Not that we need a half-hour special. No, actually, we do need a half-hour special. I've got plenty of legislation. Vaccine product liability, ending big tech censorship, disarming the federal bureaucracy. We've got, ending Congress's ability to borrow money. We've got ending withholding during the time you're earning your standard deduction. We've got jury instructions so the judges aren't charged anymore. We've got a bunch of bills. Jonathan Mosley has a bill, you know, that handles all the bankruptcies that are coming when the COVID money runs out. We've got Josie's bill on fingerprint voter ID. We've got we've got Pianki's bill on separating the ballots, federal and state, in an election. We've got tons of bills. We got a lot of stuff here. We can fix pretty much anything. We just have to get known and get out there. And a half-hour One American News special, yeah, that'd be a good start. So we just need all these folks talking about it. All right. So I wrote this March 30th, the Action Radio rapid response to Trump's bogus indictment. And then obviously, this is a bogus indictment. It is not based on crimes, but on wishful thinking that they can stop Trump from running again in 2024. It's the action of a federal communist dictatorship deep state who stole the election. And since this is an illegitimate government all the way through, it doesn't have to be obeyed. Also, this is a bogus state action of New York. Yeah, the Supreme Court even said that. Not that I have much respect for them, because I don't. Occasionally they get it right when they actually deal with a case and not make up stuff. But this is bogus. And the Supreme Court said, well, if the law is not constitutional, it doesn't have to be obeyed. Okay, well, that should apply for this as well. So, Supreme Court, where are you? How come they haven't overruled this and thrown it out? So, wait a minute. No, sorry. That's bogus. That's not going to happen. Next paragraph, I wrote, Donald Trump is a citizen of Florida as well as a citizen of the United States. See, we're all dual citizens, right? Per the 14th Amendment. And so Florida can take whatever action they want to protect Trump from the illegal political prisoner election candidate suppression campaign currently going on, including the denial of letting Trump out of Florida to go to New York. So here are the steps that need to be taken immediately. Now, shortly after I wrote this, I learned that Governor DeSantis has done the right thing. He says, no, I'm not extraditing Trump. I'm not forcing him out of Florida. That's your friggin' problem, you know? But what I would do is take it one step further and say, no, not only are we not extraditing him, but no New York officials can come here, and we'll put the National Guard around Mar-a-Lago if necessary to keep you out. That would include the feds. Screw you, you know? And so the states have to start protecting their citizens. So the 14th Amendment is really clear. Let me just read it just to be on the safe side, lest I be misquoted or misquote the Constitution. Amendment 14 says, that's 27, let's go back a bit here. All persons born or naturalized in the United States, okay, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, that means, you know, your parents were, at least one of your parents was a U.S. citizen, are citizens of the United States and here's the good part, of the state wherein they reside. So anybody who lives in Florida who is a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident is not only, citizens of the United States are also citizens of the state of Florida. I would think that extends to permanent residents who have been given permission to be here permanently, you know, green cards. They're not citizens, but they're certainly residents deserving of state protection of the state in which they reside also, to a lesser extent, because immigrants are not citizens and do not deserve, obviously, full protection of the Constitution. They can't vote. They can't serve on juries. Anybody ever wonder why it's so important that permanent residents can't serve on juries? Because people don't think of jury duty as a big deal. Well, the reason is because juries can nullify laws. Juries are incredibly powerful. Juries are actually supreme to judges, but the judges never tell the juries this, and the juries never ask. Well, okay, I did. I'm different. I was cut from a different cloth, as they say. But yeah, if you ever confront a judge and say, look, wait a minute, I'm supreme to you. Well, how can that be? I'm the judge, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Well, wait a minute. Doesn't the Constitution say we the people? You know, aren't you a public servant? Judge, you know, so I'm going to instruct you. I actually said that in a court case. I said, look, I'm going to instruct you, because the judge threw me off, of course. So you can't do this. Yeah, I can. I said, I represent the people. You represent the government. You know, if the government is subordinate to the people, then of course I can tell you what to do. Well, you're just going to pick and choose laws. No, I'm going to follow the law. And if I don't follow the law, it's your job to tell me. And then we'll talk. It was quite an interesting discussion. All right. So So then I said, so here are the bullet points that I said should be taken immediately. One, put the Florida National Guard in a 10-mile perimeter around Mar-a-Lago. Trump, his family, and anyone he designates can come and go as they please, but there is a no-pass zone. In other words, you cannot pass, all right, no-pass zone for any federal officials or employees or any official of the state of New York. Trump can also make a no-guest list. So in other words, people he doesn't want to see, 10-mile perimeter. The Florida, you know, could be the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, could be Mar-a-Lago Police, but if necessary, the Florida National Guard should, you know, block Mar-a-Lago from any enforcement by the state of New York, because this is sovereign Florida territory. Screw you, New York. It's not true. You know, we're not going to let you rig an election by making Trump look bad just because of your political purposes in this bogus lawsuit. Okay, I don't care what the grand jury said. Obviously, they're a bunch of idiots. They're certainly not Trump's peers. Trump's peers would be conservative billionaires who believe in America first. So who should be on the panel? Elon Musk. He'd be a good juror. Who else might we put? Conservative billionaires. I guess the Koch brothers, one of them's left, but they're not that conservative anymore. Who are the conservative billionaires? It's a good question. How many people are actually Trump's peers who are billionaires who believe in America first, who would be comparable to Trump, who could actually serve as a juror or on a grand jury as peers? It's an interesting question. All right, second point. There should be declared a no-fly zone or temporary flight-restricted zone over Mar-a-Lago up to 10,000 feet, also enforced by the Florida National Guard. If the feds try to nationalize our guard, Governor DeSantis has to refuse. Point number two. Point number three. Trump should in no way leave Florida. I'm telling you, Trump, don't leave Florida. Don't go to New York. I'm telling you. Trust me on this one. Don't go. Trump should in no way leave Florida. Never go to New York. Have the Attorney General of Florida sue New York for prosecutorial misconduct and have anyone associated with the Trump indictment arrested. So I would arrest the DA, Frump, what's his name, Alvin? You know, it makes me wonder where Simon and Theodore are. You have to be old enough to get that reference. So Alvin Bragg. So Bragg wants bragging material. So Alvin Bragg, District Attorney of New York, needs to be arrested for prosecutorial misconduct, because obviously these aren't serious charges. They're a joke. They're political. Anyway, and anyone associated with that needs to be arrested too, especially if they come to Florida. Come to Florida. Yeah, enjoy our hospitality. We can make a gulag too for New York. Anyway, Governor DeSantis has already declared he will not help the New York DA. So that's the good news. So DeSantis has done something really great. He said, I'm not helping you take Trump out of Florida. I'm not extraditing him. Now, I heard recently from someone, I've forgotten who it is, it might be Jonathan, that the governor of Florida has some pretty extraordinary powers to protect the citizens of Florida. So I'll ask him about that. But that's something I think is absolutely critical. Bullet point number four, Ashley Moody, Florida Attorney General, needs to immediately indict Joe Biden for election fraud and stealing the government in a coup. So if they can indict Trump on these bogus charges, we should at least be able to indict Joe Biden on real charges of stealing the government. So that's how you do it. See, you fight fire with fire and with bigger fire, you know, because we know Trump, we know Biden stole the election as well as Obama, Hillary, Susan Rice, and, you know, probably John Bolton, all the permanent war class neocons, you know, Schumer, Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, all those folks, the deep state, they all stole the election, Mike Pence, you know, so I would immediately indict Joe Biden. And if he wants to, doesn't make him sing like a canary, as they say. Go ahead, Joe, sing like a canary. Tell us what you know of who's involved. Of course, then they'll say, well, he's not mentally competent to declare who was involved in the coup. Oh, really? Then what's he doing in the White House? You know, either way, we win. Next bullet point. Florida needs to ban all flights from New York. Ban all flights originating in New York. No cruise ships can go from Florida to New York or from New York to Florida. Trains to Florida cannot go through New York. So in other words, we have a travel ban with New York. That we need to do. So Governor DeSantis, if you're listening, now, like I say, he's doing the right thing. He's not extraditing Trump, but he needs to blockade New York. We need to isolate New York, blockade New York. But gee, Greg, the people will pay. Okay, fine. So they'll pressure Alvin Bragg to stop his bragging rights. Okay, next one. If possible, Florida should open up a stock exchange to compete with the New York Stock Exchange. Okay, I think it's a great idea. So let's have the Miami Stock Exchange. So let's have an alternate stock exchange to New York to defund Wall Street. Let's do it. Next one, Florida has to ban all imports of food, wine, cheese, and other manufactured or agricultural goods produced in New York. So in other words, Florida needs to do a trade ban on New York. Look, a lot of places make food, wine, and cheese. France, for example. Okay. The rest of the country. I think even New England makes wine. Nevada makes wine. But the growing season is, what, 5 weeks? Because it's so hot there and dry. But California wine. California's actually, well, you might want to boycott them too for other reasons. But in other words, a lot of places, you know, let's grow our own food. Well, apparently there's Florida wine. I haven't tried it yet, but there's some wineries I want to start visiting. Cheese, I bet you we make cheese. Wisconsin, you know, especially if they vote for another conservative judge to replace their previous conservative judge and don't go all woke and become a bunch of communists. So yeah, we get Wisconsin cheese. So we don't need any new products. Next one, no Florida official can attend any function in New York. So the entire Florida, everybody's like, nope, sorry, you can't go. Just like they banned that, they had an all-star game that was supposed to go to Atlanta. And we're not going to Atlanta. They're not pushing gay special rights. Well, of course, there is no such thing as special rights under the Constitution. Didn't stop people from boycotting Atlanta. So let's boycott New York. What about next here? Florida must commence a complete economic blockade and boycott of New York, especially regarding conventions and any sporting events. So Florida teams, don't play in New York. I'm serious. Don't go. Conventions, don't go to New York. Go somewhere else. You know, we've got great places in Florida for conventions. Next one, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, the FDLE, should escort out of the state any federal or New York employee if they don't live here, and then close down all federal and any New York buildings in the state of Florida so they can't operate here until this is over. They should have done that anyway for January 6th. All federal offices in the state of Florida should have been closed once the first prisoner was put in the D.C. gulag, political prisoner. But that still can be done now, and now's a good reason to do it. Next, seize all federal land in Florida and make it state land per the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. Now, we've covered this with Dr. Roger Roots, who's also a lawyer. He's in Washington right now. He had a rather funny meme for those that are friends of Roger Roots. But we talked for 2 hours on why federal land in the states is not federal land, because the Constitution says the only federal land is D.C., and the necessary land under buildings that are on the docks, in other words, the border, and under military bases. That's it. So it's not under military base, and it's not on our border, and it's not D.C. It's not federal land. You know, that simple. And so Florida, any federal land in Florida should be immediately seized, made state land, and say, screw you, federal government. Kick out the BLM, kick out everybody else. Next, ship all illegal aliens from Florida to New York. That might be easier said than done, but at least we can make it a start. Remember when we used to, when DeSantis sent the illegals to Martha's Vineyard, which I renamed Mighty Whitey Island. So we did a few shows on that. So send all the illegals, you know, the colored people, the black and brown people that the left hates. Obviously they hate. Look what goes on in the schools and in the big cities, right? So send all the illegal aliens we can from Florida to New York. Next one, start and broadcast a massive PR campaign with ads titled "We Hate New York." Okay, you know, they have "I Love New York," but "We Hate New York." Well, hate's a bad thing, Greg. No, but in this case, it's funny. All right, here we go. So here's this is a big one. Not directly related to an action item, but I thought I'd put it in anyway. All 7 battleground states with Trump electors have to recall their Brandon electors and certify Trump electors to put Trump back in the White House immediately past the 2-year mark. This is right in my article. Since it is past the 2-year mark, the 22nd Amendment says that serving less than 2 years of a term allows for that term not to count in the two-term maximum. So Trump can return to the White House anytime now and still run in 2024. That's something really key, folks. And not a lot of people, I think, get that. I talked about it with Christina Bob, confirmed it with her. She says, yep, that's right. You know, and she's Trump's attorney. She knows more about the law than I do, you know. Anyway, so Trump, as of January 21st, 2023, was then past the 2-year mark, which is January 20th, 2023. You know, owing to the government deep state insurrection, which stole the government January 20th of 2021. So Trump is now eligible to go to the White House and then run for 2024, because this term being less than 2 years wouldn't count against him. Isn't that interesting? And then the last bullet point, every other state that believes in America should do the same as Florida. So those are the main points. Blockade New York. Mar-a-Lago becomes a no-fly zone for you know, New York officials, you know, a no-pass zone. And basically we start using the law against the state of New York, New York officials, and, of course, the federal government. Now, the reason I include the federal government is because they're supporting New York. They haven't stopped them from doing this bogus action. So that's how it goes. So now I got a few minutes. What am I talking about between now and when Jonathan gets here? Let's see what's on my list of many things to do. Excuse me. I have a bunch of articles. I want to get into the transgender thing a bit too. This is something that's a big deal as well. And so I might as well get really controversial here. So it's coming out more and more. And we talked about this with Judy Mikovits. So it's not like we don't have a biochemical and molecular biological basis for saying that those individuals that were given ADHD drugs, mostly boys, those that were given psychotropic drugs, you know, boys and girls, young men and women, that would be the Lovix, Prozac, all those kind of psychotropics that had the side effects of homicidal and suicidal tendencies, and those that were trans drug altered. In other words, those that went through trans altering, that's what I call it, because you're not transgendering. You're not transiting to another gender. You can't do that. You know, everybody knows that who knows anything about this, right? So you're trans altering. So if you're trans altering with drugs that also have the exact same effects of homicidal and suicidal tendencies, then that's a huge problem. And so those, you know, and we've got articles on those being, you know, some of these mass shootings have been carried out by trans altered folks. So my question is, in fact, Pianki's on the line now. So let me ask it. In fact, I'm going to make his line live and ask it as I'm making it live. My question is, should trans altered people who have taken dangerous drugs that cause suicidal and homicidal tendencies, given what Aubrey Hale, I'll mention his name did. No, her name. She started off as female and stayed female. I get confused. Anyway, the person, the trans-altered person that murdered those kids and those teachers in Nashville, should transgender folks be banned guns just as medical marijuana users are? Those that have been judged mentally incapacitated or for whatever reason. Wouldn't that be interesting to do? Obviously, this is, you know, thrown in the left's face. But should people who are trans-altered be denied buying firearms? Pianki? And I'm kind of throwing the question
well,
out there.
Well, yeah, I think so, but this woman, Hale, was in Obama's military, right?
I don't know. Was she a veteran? You tell me.
Yeah, from what I read.
Huh.
So she learned how to use a gun in Obama's military.
Now, does Obama's military have significance to this because they promoted trans-altered folks into the military?
Well, I guess one could point some fingers in that direction.
Okay. I mean, I'm just wondering. You know, and I don't have a problem with anybody serving the military in as long as they're fit. But, you know, they take boys who have had too much Ritalin or Ritalin at all. They're denied the ability to serve in the military. So why shouldn't trans people who have had trans-altering drugs, who might have suicidal and homicidal tendencies, have the same restrictions as those with Ritalin and ADHD drugs?
Well, I think I mentioned that Friday that apparently
go ahead.
These psychotropic drugs are causing these delayed problems in these individuals. So, no, I wouldn't want anyone, just like in military, wouldn't allow people that have ever been on Ritalin to join.
Yeah. Well, I got a bunch of articles here. I got the links between psychiatric drugs and violence. We talked about that one last week. Psychiatric drugs, school shootings, talked about that. Here's one I have too. Well, here's an interesting article. I don't know if I want to do this one or just want to talk for a minute. I've got something that I talked about too, why some gays are trying to drop transgenders from the LGBT to make it LGB. And this is an intellectual takeout. Maybe we'll get to that one in a bit. But I think there's a real separation. I think you cannot put, and I wonder if the trans-altered did this for a reason. I'm using the word trans-altered on purpose for those of you that aren't familiar, because you cannot transgender. So just to make it really clear to everybody out there why I'm saying trans-altered, because that's what you're doing. You're taking a person and you're altering them with drugs and surgery so they will never be the person they were before. And so they've been altered. That's why I call it that. But what I'm saying is, does that cause the violence? Let's see if I find that series of articles, because there's a bunch of them. I think Newsweek actually did it, which is interesting. Should that prohibit trans-altered folks from owning guns, just like people who, you know, are on any kind of drug, even medical marijuana users are prohibited officially. I don't know how much it happens, but they're actually prohibited from owning firearms because of medical marijuana.
Well, you can't get certification as a pilot if you've ever done some of these drugs.
So maybe trans-altered folks that have dangerous drugs in the system, you know, with homicidal and suicidal tendencies shouldn't be pilots. How's that for a thought?
Well, I probably wouldn't want one.
But the reason I'm saying this is not because I'm trying to limit the amount of people who are eligible to be pilots. I'm saying this because the left is trying to demonize everybody that disagrees with them, cancel them, get rid of them, take away guns. They want to confiscate guns from everybody. They're saying, well, look, wait a minute. You know, let's use your criteria against groups that you favor. You know, that's why I'm doing it. I mean, this is a lesson in hypocrisy. But let's go to Newsweek before Jonathan. Jonathan's going to be here in about 5 minutes. So this is Newsweek, March 28th, so just a few days ago. And they asked the question, how many mass shootings have been carried out by transgender people? And I said transgender, even though you know I'm going to be using the term trans-altered. This is by Alex Phillips, A-L-E-K-S, A-L-E-K-S Phillips. And this was on March 28th. And so, oh, yeah, so what were we now, April 3rd, yeah, about 6th, whatever. Anyway, he says a tweet listing four, what is it, he or her? What do you think Alex is? A-L-E-K-S. Male or female? Want to take a guess? I don't know.
Probably. Well, you can't call them female any longer because I see where a superintendent lost his bid for a job because he addressed a commissioner as female, and they took his application, his resume, out of the bunch.
What kind of communism is that? See, the nice thing about radio is I don't have a boss, so I can say it, and I do. I mean, Blog Talk's really good. They don't. Remember Bert the Nazi that used to call the show? So they let Bert the Nazi on, and he spews all kinds of hate and venom. And you know, it's so what we do with people like that is we counter it with logic and compassion and decent stuff. Anyway, here's what the article says. A tweet listing four mass shootings in the past 5 years that were perpetrated by transgender, a.k.a. trans-altered, people has gone viral, attracting 5.4 million views as of 8 a.m. On Tuesday. In fact, it attracted the attention of Twitter owner Elon Musk. Now, this is Newsweek. This is not a conservative source. Okay, they're pretty much middle of the road now to liberal, depending on the article. Article says, Benny Johnson, a political columnist and Turning Point USA official, interesting in quoting him, wrote in his viral tweet, one thing is very clear. The modern trans movement is radicalizing activists into terrorists. That's pretty straightforward. Musk, who has expressed varying views on transgender issues and is reported to have a transgender child, oh yeah, of course they want to make that point, replied to his tweet with an exclamation mark, itself seen 2.2 million times. So it says, here we go. So Benny Johnson writes, the Colorado Springs shooter identified as non-binary. The Denver shooter identified as trans. The Aberdeen shooter identified as trans. The Nashville shooter identified as trans. One thing is very clear. The modern trans movement is radicalizing activists into terrorists. My question is, how much of that is drug-induced, psychotropic drug-induced as well? So you got psychotropics. You've got trans-altering drugs, both of which cause brain damage, as far as I can see. You've got psychological counseling. You've got the radicalization from the left going on in the schools and with the counselors and with the psychologists. You've got anti-ADHD drugs that I have no idea what they do. Adderall. I did a story on ADHD drugs, and all these guys called in saying, look, I'm still suffering from Adderall when I was 5 years old. Like, what the hell are they putting you on that way back then? So isn't Adderall like one step away from heroin? I forgot what it's connected to. It's connected to some other drug.
Well, why come they not be excited for driving under the influence?
Well, that's a good question. So in other words, so a trans person who's under the influence of the drugs that are trying to alter them, are they not, in fact, drug-induced and not able to drive? That's a good point. We need to start talking about these things. Anyway, he says the tweet follows a school shooting in Nashville. What do you mean school shooting? It was a murder. They're really sanitizing the language about this. School shooting? Sounds kind of calm, doesn't it, right? It's a murder in Nashville on Monday in which they say the name Aubrey Hale, identified by police as transgender. Why did the police identify her as that? Him. No, wait a minute. It's a her. Where did she start? What did this person start as? She's female, trying to be a guy.
Female.
Okay, so she's female, trying to be a guy, which, of course, you can't do. Is suspected to have shot and killed six people, including three members of the staff and 3 9-year-old children, which I hear one of them is actually 8, but that's, you know, anyway. So Ollie London, a media personality who has become critical of the transgender movement since deciding to detransition. Oh, there you go. So this is the best people. People have actually been there. Ollie says the trans movement is pushing more and more extremism each day. So they need to be listed as a domestic terrorist group, one would think. He says they recruit people, indoctrinate them, and pump them full of propaganda until they become filled with hate and rage. Well, not only is pumping them full of propaganda, they're pumping them full of drugs. If you pump people with enough, well, it's like the testosterone into female bodies. That can't be a good thing. You know, it's like the accelerator and the brake on the economy. Anyway, it says, well, the article says, well, we used the apparent prevalence of shootings by transgender individuals to highlight mental health concerns. That's interesting language. Out that there had already been more than 100 mass shooters in 2023 alone. Well, see, what is it? What do they consider mass? Mass, I think the new definition is it due to two or more or three or more? See, mass to me is a whole lot of people. I think they're exaggerating the language.
It happens in Chicago every day.
Okay, so Chicago is a mass shooting zone. Maybe we should declare it that. Anyway, it says, therefore, the number of mass shootings perpetrated by transgender individuals, or as I say, trans-altered, mounted to a fraction of the total number of the U.S. over the past 5 years. Okay, according to figures from the Gun Violence Archive, that'd be a liberal group, there have been 131 mass shootings this year, and there were 647 in 2022. In total, there have been 2,861 mass shootings in the U.S. since 2018. Some have had more than one perpetrator. That seems like a lot. Do you remember 2,861 mass shootings on the news, Bianchi, in 2022? Oh, since 2018?
Only in Chicago.
Well, I mean, I'm not laughing at Chicago deaths. I'm not. I'm just saying that it's an interesting irony. Newsweek reached out to Gun Violence Archive for further details. Well, let's get the details who the people are. Okay, so let's skip all the propaganda. Of course, then they talk about Everytown Research and Policy. That's Michael Bloomberg's billions to try and get rid of guns. Yeah, so they give you all the disclaimers first. So let's get to the news. So this is three of these shooters identified as transgender, one later identified as non-binary. I'm not sure what the difference is. So binary, that would be male and female. Is that what they consider binary? And non-binary is anything where they're trying to add categories beyond male and female? Let me get my language straight here.
I don't know. You know, I'm going to tell you, it's so confusing, even with this Hale person. From what I suspect is that she was born a female, and the news media don't want to designate her as male. He used that pronoun. And, you know, you may mention about Michael Bloomberg. Why don't he work on taking weapons away from these people that's on these drugs instead of trying to go after folks like you and I? Weapons.
Well, if you're a leftist supremacist, your enemy is anybody who believes in freedom. Can you explain, Jonathan's on the line too. Let me explain this, who really explained it to me the best way. That was Dr. Peter Pry, who used to be on the show before. I believe he was killed by a COVID shot last August. And he said white supremacy is not about white people per se. What it's about is the supremacy of the thoughts of white people, particularly white men. And that would be Magna Carta, you know, the different freedom documents we've had over the years, Constitution, Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights. So what they think is the supremacy of the idea of freedom over the idea of groupthink and communism. So what they're saying, if they're saying you're a white supremacist, they're saying you believe in freedom is supreme over their Marxism. And that's really what they're fighting. This is an ideological battle. It's not a color battle. They're using skin color as kind of like a metaphor because the people that wrote about freedom the most were white guys, you know, going back a couple thousand years, you know, or however long. A thousand years at least. Magna Carta was like 10-something or 11-something. It's a long time ago. And I'm sure there were doctrines before that.
At least 1,000 years in modern history.
Okay, so you got 1,000 years of predominantly white guys writing about freedom, predominantly European white guys writing about freedom. And so that's the white supremacy that they're talking about, the supremacy of freedom over communism, freedom over slavery, freedom over Marxism, freedom over groupthink and group so-called rights. That's the supremacy that they're really fighting. And if people understood that, when Peter Price said that to me, it made everything else really clear. That's the supremacy. So the reason they say white supremacy, they want to reduce it to a discussion of color, but it's really not a discussion of color. It's a discussion of ideology, freedom versus slavery, individual versus group, liberty versus control. It's that same old argument we've had since the first person wanted to control the first other person. That's what's going on. Jonathan, have you ever heard that before? That's described that way as white supremacy being the supremacy of the freedom of the individual, of a thought process of an ideology versus a skin color? Because it makes a lot of sense to me. Jonathan?
It makes a lot of sense. I've never heard it before.
Okay.
And that's very deep. However, I've heard things, of course, that make that cause that to make sense, or mean that that makes sense. Because, you know, for example, according to the left, you know, Larry Elder is a white supremacist.
So that proves the point then, right? Doesn't that prove
yeah.
the point that it's not about color? It's about the supremacy of an ideal versus an ideology.
Right. You know, the Proud Boys are led by a black man.
Mm-hmm.
From Cuba, you know, a Spanish-speaking, you know, black man, but they're a white supremacist group. Owens, what's her first name?
Candace Owens? Candace.
Candace
yeah, we
Owens
get her on the
is a white supremacist.
Yeah. So in that respect, well, let's ask Pianki then. So in other words, is the left saying that no, quote, person of color, saying I despise, because I have color, you can see me, but are they talking about the non-white persons of color cannot have the same freedom or that same freedom of belief? Is that what they're trying to do? Trying to divorce and separate, quote, people of color from the so-called white supremacy of Western European white guys?
No, they're trying to make their ideology bigger than what it is because it's diminishing.
Okay.
That's exactly
powerful. Yeah, that's what it is. See, blacks, you've had these black activists out here, ideologists, separatists, and so on, mm-hmm. and they group, they like the Maytag man, basically. So they are nowhere near as big as they would like to be. And they
right.
and they will die off unless they can indoctrinate more people into that line of thought, which they aren't doing. So they're going to die off.
Well, the hysteria of calling everybody racist and everybody white supremacist and Nazis and everything is you know at a fever pitch. But these are really powerful. Insights, I think. I will say, as I've alluded to or tried to explain, in my analysis of, you know, of the revolutionary left, you know, and the revolutionary, you know, the left is always revolutionary. It's bitter, it's divisive, it's hateful. They hate the way things are. They hate everything. And they want to destroy everything because they think the things they're destroying are bad, and somehow, you know, a utopia is going to follow. Excuse me, is going to follow into place. But anyway, so the revolutionary left has always followed this pattern of trying to, as Pianki says, make themselves bigger than they are. They've always tried to have this idea of. You know, let's say, you know, I don't know, you know, trade, you know, pipe fitters for whatever, you know, for communism or something, or pipe, you know, or every group they can think of as if you're a pipe fitter, then you have to believe this, you know, dentists for whatever. They've always tried to imply, you know, they have, you know, maybe they have five people, and they identify them as something, and therefore everybody who is in that group must agree with them. I mean, that's been a tactic. We haven't seen it so much lately, but it's always been a tactic that if you are this, then you agree with us. So they've always tried to do it. The other thing I've tried to explain at times is the why is it that institutions that we used to respect have become so corrupt and so politicized? It's because the left gravitates towards any place where there's influence. They always try to infiltrate anything any place where if they get in there, they can infiltrate things. You know, it's sort of like an image. It's not a very, you know, good analogy, but that a revolution starts with taking over the radio tower days, you know, the television station, you know, because they want to have that influence. So so I do believe that, you know, so that this is why, for example, when we say that the schools are corrupt, the courts are corrupt, the FBI is corrupt, I try to say this is not an accident. It's like people will say, oh, yeah, sure, come on. Like, no, it's no accident that these institutions have been infiltrated. It's part of their strategy for over 100 years. It's how they do it. And these are very interesting analyses, and I think it's consistent with, you know, with everything we've seen and I think it's probably the only way to understand what's going on.
Hmm.
Because the thing is, when they call people, you know, a white supremacist or different variations, you scratch your head and they go, what the hell are they talking about? The only way that makes any sense is the way you describe it. I mean, you hope that if they say it enough times, the average person is going to go, well, that's just crazy. You people are nuts. And yet they just keep saying it. I don't know what anybody else thinks about how they'll, you know, members of Congress and hearings and everybody will say it with such certitude. And you're looking at them like they're absolutely bizarre. So I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, they're trying to make it a self-fulfilling prophecy. If they say it enough times, they think people will believe it. I want to talk about – I got a question for you.
But what you're saying
– go ahead.
And okay. Kathy is saying it starts to make more sense.
Okay. Well, if people would use that against it, when someone says, if someone comes on my show, calls up and says, you're a white supremacist, I said, you mean the supremacy of freedom, of liberty, of our founding documents? You know, I mean, what are we talking about? The white paper it's printed on? What do you mean by a white supremacist? I would challenge them using that argument, and let's see where they go with it.
Right. I think their certainty goes beyond the idea that if they just call an orange a banana enough times, people will fall for it.
Yeah.
I think I think your explanation makes more sense than that.
Well, I got to give credit where credit's due. It came from Dr. Pry, unfortunately, who's no longer with us, but that's he's the one that told me. So I'm just, you know, passing it on. Pianki, go ahead. I got some more.
Well, calling you a white supremacist. Is that supposed to make you feel guilt, then relinquish something? Mm. That's what they're trying to do. Yeah, because they call you white supremacist, saying proud to be one.
Yeah.
You know, these people, the people who come up in this country, in the United States, and are failures for whatever reason, then they think that it was because of something that you done, white people. I mean,
yeah.
Think about it. They want you to relinquish what you have to them without the merits being in place. I mean, just think about what they're talking about in other areas. And then most importantly, they want to go after your kids. That's the least thing that you can do to fight them off is to take your kids from their presence and their control.
Right. Well, I do wonder if, well, of course, this also is a communist tactic, a revolutionary tactic. And really, it's not just a communist. The British Empire, from what I understand, is famous about, you know, controlling, you know, a minority of adventurers or eventually occupiers. controlling vast areas of territory and people by pitting them, you know, fighting old grievances and pitting them against each other. So,
like India,
you know, but I,
for example.
Well, yeah, and so, you know, so I wonder how much the, you know, they, people in the various. As soon as, the reason I stopped is because when you say a minority group, really there's no limit to the ways to divide society, to create, to stoke grievances. So, mm-hmm. you know, like what grievance group are they agitating? And basically everyone they can think of. But
well,
but
everybody's a minority group. You know, white men are a minority
right.
group in this country. There are, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's certainly under half, way under half. You know, it's probably maybe a quarter of the country might be white guys. Okay, so that's a minority. So how can we oppress people if we're a minority? If three quarters of the population is female and non-white, then how can we be? How can we oppress anybody? We can simply be outvoted. So that's a bogus theory.
Well, then it becomes systemic. It's like. People, and this also is communist language,
mm-hmm.
is that the populace in question is not self-aware.
Hmm.
I mean, this is communist thing. And again, communism, I know there are people who are going to say, oh, that's just, you know, people wearing Russian fur hats. No, communism came from Germany and Austria,
mm-hmm.
from atheistic you know, philosophers.
Yeah.
And it just found a home in Russia and in China, but it is not fundamentally limited to any particular part of the planet or any particular group or anything like that.
Well, what's interesting? Because Karl Marx was German. Isn't it interesting that the two greatest wars, World War One and World War Two, were fought between Germans who created Karl Marx and authoritarianism and communism and Marxism, and the British who had Magna Carta and freedom and a constitution and a parliament and all those kind of things and created the British that came here that created our founding documents. How's that for a thought?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know.
I mean, I just thought of it, you know, but the stuff pops into my head.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, it's interesting. But what I'm saying is that they
mm-hmm.
is that the idea of the problem from their perspective, the conundrum,
mm-hmm.
that the oppressed masses are perfectly content and don't realize how oppressed they are, is one of the conundrums that communists openly debated. And again, I've mentioned before that when communism, you know, as socialism,
mm-hmm.
you know, first was being debated like that, it had not been discredited by Joseph Stalin or the purges or things like that. So they have these discussions openly. You know, it's not like they were hushing in secret, you know, in secret someplace. They, you know, you can find these discussions out there in the open. You know, so, but the thing is, so they, you know, they would agonize over, you know, how is it that the oppressed masses don't realize they're oppressed? And, you know, how do we make them self-aware?
See, now this is the argument that I've had all the time, because people will say, this is the greatest country, this is the freest country in the world. I say, well, it's nowhere near as free as it could be and should be and was designed to be. Oh, this is the greatest place, man. We got everything. We got hot dogs, we got beer, we got football. What more do you want? Oh, I don't know. Freedom, liberty, lower taxes, less regulation, the Constitution as it was written. I don't know. Let's start there. You know, but people, because they don't know. It's like people that say, oh, I went to a public school and I turned out fine. I said, well, how do you know? You never went to a private school. You've got no basis of comparison. You don't know what you're talking about. If you haven't read the documents of freedom and how freedom was designed to be, there's no way that you can say this is the freest, greatest country compared to what it should be, because you don't know. So the masses don't know. So they don't know what freedom is. That's the whole purpose of government school, is to completely erase any knowledge of what freedom is. That's what I think. So I wanted to abolish them as soon as they closed during COVID. Go ahead.
The thing is that they do know their lives. They do know what they their eyes see, and they know that what the communists are telling them doesn't line up with reality. And so they do know that they're unconvinced. And it's like even today, and we'll talk a bit. Well, I don't know how much time. In fact, we were going to do something else just today.
We got Trump. We got all kinds of things. We got some transgender crimes, and should transgenders own guns, given the drug altering effects? But you know, they don't even let medical marijuana users. I mean, there's a bunch of places we can go this morning. I'm going to leave it to you, Jonathan, because we've talked to several.
Well,
topics
we were going to talk about jury instructions at some point, but that will just have to wait.
Do you want to do that another time? I mean, we've got a lot of news.
Yes, we'll have to do that another time. So
okay, that's fine. Next week's fine. Yeah.
With things happening now, the issue is we're seeing. If you open your eyes and look,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, and I hope your audience. If someone says, look, the cloud is shaped like a bunny, you say, well, I don't see it. Well, look, it's like this. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope people, you know, wake up in that regard because the bottom and what I hope everybody sees, and I hope they see it clearly so they can make it out for themselves, is they think you're stupid. They think, you know, they really think we're stupid.
Hmm.
And once you see it, you can't unsee it. They really think you're stupid. And
is that what the left always says? If you disagree with someone on the left, they say, well, you're not educated. Is that what that's what they're really telling you is you're stupid.
It's like, well, you... If the masses are happy with things the way they are,
mm-hmm.
it can't be that they are making an intelligent choice based on what they see in their lives. It has to be that they just don't know how oppressed they are.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I just want to make one quick comment here for what Pianki was saying in response to the white supremacy charge. As a white person, I would not agree because you were saying, well, you should just say, you know, you are a white supremacist. I would not say that because then the leftists would say, ah, see, you agree to it. Great. Now bow before Black Lives Matter. Ain't going to happen. But as a black person, you could say that you're a white supremacist because the absurdity of that statement, you could use that as an argument. Whereas I would use the argument that I made, you know, if you're talking about the supremacy of freedom over communism, absolutely. I believe in that, you know, without saying white supremacy, I'd say that the supremacy is this. So I would redefine supremacy, not white. That's how
supremacy in what is a question? Is this supremacy in technology, inventions,
no,
innovation?
Ideology and thought. Human nature and the human condition. The supremacy of freedom over control, of liberty over slavery. Go ahead.
Yeah, in order, the hell with slavery, Africans taught the world slavery, which includes mm-hmm. whites.
That's a good point.
Everybody wants
too.
To boast. If they want to boast and celebrate how Africans was the first in civilization compared to the other world, while Africa mm-hmm. was basking in when whites was in caves, well, that means that you had to teach them You had to teach them what you call slavery.
Yep.
And chronologically, it did happen. So when somebody called you white supremacy in what? In those areas, unfortunately, that's what history shows. It's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, uh-huh. I mean, the Aztecs were an advanced civilization, and they had human sacrifice. You know, a little bunch of societies did. Rome was an advanced republic, but they conquered all kinds of people and killed them. You know, mm-hmm. so there's a lot to this. Democracy only lasted a little while in Greece because it's a flawed system. It leads directly to tyranny when the majority gets co-opted into taking away, you know, the upper half's income and power. And minority rights get destroyed. 4%, go ahead.
4%. You know, I hear people talking about saying that the states that Donald Trump won are the most crime infested. You're
That's
right, they are. It's because the blue cities in those red states is where the crime exists. And then when you look at the picture of a crime, it make up about the people who make up about 4%, 5% at the most of the population, and they're black males.
Yeah. Yeah, if you take certain cities, if you take a, you know, because they say the U.S. has a huge crime rate, death rate, you know, gun assault, murder rate. But if you take out New York, Baltimore, Chicago, New Orleans, Los Angeles, maybe a couple of other cities that are liberal cities, Detroit, you know, you take those cities out, then the crime across America looks really good compared to most of the rest of the world. Anyway, I want to get on to
Jonathan.
If
you take the red state of Missouri, take the red state of Missouri. The crime is in two areas, mainly in St. Louis, and in areas in St. Louis would be North City and North County, until they started moving over to South County, running whites out, South City. So you got to say these things. I don't understand why people are scared to say what they want to say. Then you need to put travel warnings out against traveling to these areas because it's dangerous to your life. It's dangerous to the people that stay there, but surely you, an outsider, it would be dangerous to your life too.
Be interesting if you did that, those counties in St. Louis. You know, you're now entering such and such. You know, dangerous to white people. That'd be a fascinating thing to do. Hey, let's.
Well, they need to have billboards because the NAACP issued travel warnings to Missouri, saying that you're liable to get killed by a white police officer. They issued a national travel warning. And they just issued another one. I forget what city. I think it's Florida.
Yeah, don't come to Florida because we're all dangerous here. Yeah, right. Hey, this is a great topic. I'd love to, let's take up an hour. I want to sort of maximize Jonathan's time while he's here. Jonathan, do you want to get into the whole Trump thing? And my article, when I was saying this earlier, that he shouldn't go, that it's a trap, that it should be virtual, if anything, and that Alvin Bragg should be prosecuted for prosecutorial misconduct, that I had a bunch of things. You know, I even go so far as Ashley Moody should indict Joe Biden for stealing the election. You know, there's so many things that could be done. Boycott New York, block their flights, put the National Guard around Mar-a-Lago, have a no-fly zone over Mar-a-Lago for New York officials, you know, close down the federal buildings in Florida, close down the New York State buildings if there are any, boycott goods from New York, you know, food, wine, cheese, stop all flights from there. I mean, there's so many things we could do and we should do to combat this. I mean, seriously combat it. You know, ship all our illegal aliens to New York. Those are all things that I put into my article. I don't know if you had a chance to read it. But how could this possibly happen, this political – it's just nothing but politics, and have the prosecutor not be prosecuted under Florida law or even any law, federal law for that matter, or even Albany, the capital of New York. How did this all happen, Jonathan?
Well, I mean, the real reason with, you know, how did we get here is because – you know, we want to be nice to the leftists.
Not my article.
in the last, you know, my mother in the late 70s, I became aware of how my mother was in Phyllis Schlafly's Eagle Forum, and to think back at least that far, the fact that pretty much everything that it's happening now. The conservatives were warning people, and everybody's reaction was like, nah, that'll never happen. You know? So the reason it happened is because nobody, you know, everybody wants to watch sports and do, you know, watch TV and do their own thing and not pay any attention to their country. It's like they say, it's Benjamin Franklin told the woman who asked him, a republic if you can keep it. And we're not even
that's kind of falling on us. Yeah. But I agree with Pianki's point. The conservatives are cowards, that they don't stand up, that there is no countersuit. I mean, Ashley Moody should immediately indict Joe Biden for election fraud because obviously the evidence is overwhelming. just the logical fact that a senile old man cannot beat the most popular president in memory while sitting in a basement and having rallies that nobody goes to. That just intrinsically doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So where's the indictment against Alvin Bragg? Where's the counter indictment against him? That's what they should be doing.
The thing is, who would do that? That would have to be. I mean, the federal government's not going to do that.
No, they don't care. They want Trump indicted. Yeah. But was it you who told me about the powers of the Florida governor that Ron DeSantis did something good? And this will set him up nicely for 2028. Well, the jury's still out on that. But at least if he says, I'm not extraditing, I'm not helping New York take Trump out of Florida, screw you. You know, so.
And that's the best thing to do.
I agree.
Trump
but
don't
I
have
more
to go
than
to Florida. What are they going to do? Send a bunch of Boy Scouts to Florida to go get Donald Trump?
Yeah, and that's when they should be arrested by the Florida State Police. And if necessary, like I say, a no-fly zone and a 10-mile border, a no-pass zone with the Florida National Guard against anybody, any official from New York. Ain't going to happen. You're not going to do this. Get the hell out of our state.
But other than a few like Jim Jordan, you know, the attitude had always – I mean, because conservatism was originally – This academic faculty lounge, you know, discussion, and they would have newsletters. You know, the conservative movement would send newsletters to each other,
mm-hmm.
and have the occasional dinner, and and that's it. And so when they had this idea, you know, when younger conservatives came along and wanted to actually do things,
yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. Keep going.
I mean the idea of that's where they derisively called them neocons, which like you know anytime an opponent makes a name. For their opponent, it's usually inaccurate and meaningless and probably, you know, and today I would say the neocons are a bunch of warmongers.
But yeah, I was going to say that's the permanent war class, as I call them. And
well,
that's what the neocons are.
But I don't think it was ever started out that way. It started out that the neocons were the terms made up by the academic do-nothing conservative because they were horrified that they actually wanted to, like, win elections and actually implement policy.
What,
you know,
isn't
the,
that how
the
go ahead.
But no, I mean, the conservative movement originally just wanted to sit in big chairs in the club and, you know, smoke a pipe and a smoking desk.
They smoke cigars, drink brandy like Titanic, yeah. Was that William F. Buckley Jr., who used to be very snooty in his voice? And he would have his academic discussions, but he never actually accomplished anything except that he had he'd do National Review. And that's, I think of like William F. Buckley, you know, in his chair in his gray suit, having very intellectual discussions, but not actually trying to change anything as he used to talk. Is that about right?
And I think, yes, and I think part of that is that they wanted to, is that part of the point of being conservative is just to say things, you know, just to hear yourself talk.
So what if you want to be a patriot, or as I call myself now, an anti-federalist? The more I read the anti-federalist papers, the more I identify as an anti-federalist, because the Constitution had some serious flaws the way it was set up. But look what's happened today. It had the ability to borrow money. The federal judiciary have assumed the powers of interpretation and judicial review. You know, there's some really horrible things that have happened.
It's been amended. The conservative movement would be perfectly happy with your opinions as long as you didn't do anything about it.
Oh, okay.
You know,
if you
try to do something about it, then you know that just isn't done.
Yeah, but I didn't mean this wussy radio. This is action radio, not wussy radio. So that's the difference.
Yeah, well, that was.
I do want to get
that was the thing.
Hey, do you know
what? Like,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. What? Okay.
Well, I was going to say, do you know who our guest is Thursday? I just announced it first thing this morning.
Tell me again.
Do you know Ed Dowd?
Do
you know Ed Dowd?
No.
Who's been on Tucker Carlson a bunch lately. He's all over the place. He wrote a book, what's it called? Cause Unknown, about all the sudden deaths from vaccines, you know, in 2021, 2022. He's all over the place. He's a Wall Street analyst. He's going to be on Thursday. This is going to be a fabulous guest for us. Because I want to get him tied into – beg your pardon?
You should go to the Babylon Bee, where they've got a video of a supposed Pfizer where they try to debunk in the satire these ideas of all this, these unknown deaths, if they have anything to do with Pfizer.
Mm-hmm.
And like every Pfizer spokesman like falls over inexplicably in the middle of the sentence, and then another one steps in and takes over. And then another one, Babylon Bee, in the video section.
Okay.
So they'll say about three sentences and then fall over on TV, and then another one take over. So causes unknown, I think, is the most amazing concept.
Mm-hmm.
We have all these things happening unknown, and we're nobody is paying attention to it. Anyway,
some people are. What about I should say, ask a question on death certificates. I mean, what are the legal requirements? You know, they had all kinds of, they were listing death by COVID when it wasn't COVID. It was one of maybe five or six different things, you know, after mm-hmm. diabetes, cancer, heart disease, heart attacks, you know, obesity. And they say, oh, died of COVID. So they say, oh, it's COVID death. You know, it was a comorbidity. It was totally, what's the legality around death certificates? I'm just curious if you have any knowledge in this area.
The expert.
Oh.
If the doctor says he, he died of a flying saucer, he died of a flying saucer. Now there may be professional society regulation, for saying a false thing, but everybody else, we grew up in a society that worships the expert. So if the expert says it, then it's true. You know, if he died of, what did they used to say in the old days? If they died of I can't think of the term. There's so many old terms that are coming to mind. If the doctor says he died of a broken heart, which is literally impossible, then he died of a broken heart. And the doctor has authority to record, to fill out the death certificate.
Well, I'm asking because COVID, I still have the CDC chart. In fact, I put it in one of my Substack articles that shows that COVID deaths were heading for zero as of mid-July 2020. They started in January, peaked April 15th, which is kind of ironic, and then started a 45-degree downslide directly to zero by mid-July 2020. And then they start fudging the numbers, and they went from deaths to cases. And then they started listing everything as a COVID death, even if it was a motorcycle. And so all these – this is one of the legality of this. And so now they're doing the reverse. They're specifically saying it's not the COVID shot. They're doing the exact opposite. They made everything a COVID death when they wanted to create fear and paranoia. And now that they want people to comply with their bogus – at least they're not mandates as much anymore. They're not listing anything as a COVID shot death. Yet we all know – if someone keels over at an early age, like Brian Sicknick, the Capitol Hill police officer died January 7th or whatever, natural causes, natural what? A COVID shot and two blood clots at the age of 40? I don't think so.
Well, anyway, you're always getting me off.
Sorry. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Topic here, but
come back to the topic.
So, the former president of the United States is has been apparently indicted, we're told. And his lawyers would know that they would not know what's in it. I think, as I mentioned earlier, with regard to the goofy foreperson of the grand jury, special grand jury, which is not your normal grand jury. You know, it's an investigative grand jury, which is what the grand jury started out being in our society.
How did they get to be a grand juror? How did they pick people to be on that grand jury?
the court, the clerk, randomly selects, supposedly randomly selects them from the voter rolls.
Oh.
The grand jury is controlled by the circuit court, aren't they?
Yeah. And the special grand jury, traditionally in local affairs, King didn't get involved much. And there was, very little in the way of local government. And so things like the grand jury and the sheriff played an outsized role in local government. And grand juries would engage in wide-ranging investigations. They wouldn't just do what we know that regular juries do, or even grand juries. They would, they would randomly investigate crimes, and they could investigate anybody, including the local government officials. They were not bound by the limits of what the prosecutors wanted to talk about, that's what a special grand jury did. And so you'll know that the listeners to your show, when I said that the judge openly discussed the contents as being whether to release them or not, and saying, well, he's not been indicted. He's not going to be indicted in Georgia. Because the norm is that they arrest the person first, and then they release the indictment. The indictment is under seal. I guess partly on the assumption that now in a case like this, it's fairly stupid, but it is the norm that they would that they don't want the person to run, they don't want the person to destroy evidence, they don't want other people to be influenced, they don't want witnesses to run, they don't want witnesses burning shredding documents. And even if they know that there's been an indictment, knowing what it's about would affect, might affect people's behavior. I'm not saying that makes any sense in today's world, but that's the tradition. So here we have the indictment is under seal. Apparently, according to the news and the announcements, President Trump is going to fly to New York and turn himself in, which I agree is dumb.
Yeah,
and
stupid. But legally, why is it dumb? So, if you were defending him, what would your advice be?
Well, for one thing, there has been some talk, finally, that the lawyer, his lawyer, his quote-unquote so-called lawyers, are going to file a motion to quash. And, I would say, why would you turn yourself in and then file a motion to quash? Why not buy some time and let, file a motion to quash?
What's a motion to quash?
Because outside the
What is that? What's a motion to quash, so we all know?
Well, it's sort of a motion to dismiss, but it's more,
okay.
It's what the name implies, really. And what it would amount to is that the statute of limitations is over, and it would require them to test that. Like before, we have him come all the way up here and booked in. Your indictment is a piece of junk. So let's talk about that first. The other thing too is that I think that if Ron DeSantis were so inclined, as I've said, people will say that the Constitution requires every state to honor the indictments of every other state, but the reality, the practice is that that's only if the state where the person resides is satisfied that the indictment is in order. It's like, you know, I can't issue a, you know, I can't issue a, an indictment from the state of denial and expect New York to honor it.
Yeah.
You know, or if I forge a document of an indictment and New York looked into it and said, well, this is forged, they're not going to slavishly honor something that may not have any validity. So Governor DeSantis, especially in Florida, has tremendous authority to question. He has more, I think, more than usual authority to question whether or not the indictment is legitimate. He can't just say, I don't feel like honoring it. But
right.
He can say, let me see those papers. And like, hold it, the statute of limitations has expired. I'm not going to honor that.
Yeah, I want to get everybody's attention. This is critically important, so let's get the gong. That this in the Constitution, is it the full faith and credit clause that does this? I've also was reading something about governmental immunity.
It's the slave clause. It's runaway slaves.
Okay, well, let's...
Yeah, that's what it's coming.
So let's find out exactly... Let's start with the Constitution.
It's the fugitive slave clause, which was done away with the 14th Amendment.
So, okay, so that actually makes a lot of sense. So Bianchi's saying...
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
No, yes. I'm agreeing.
So that's why states have to honor?
No, I'm not saying that's the only reason. Because in order for us to be one country, that's true. But yeah, that was part of it.
Okay. Good point. So let's take that. Let's add to it. So where in the Constitution does it say that states have to honor indictments by other states? Where,
oh,
is that full faith and credit or where? Where is it?
I believe it. I'd have to go over and look it up on my computer while we're talking.
Okay, that's fine. All right, well, let's go with what Bianchi's saying. But that's not in the Constitution. That wasn't a constitutional provision. Was it a core provision? Bianchi, where does that come from? Or was it a law?
The fugitive slave clause was in the Constitution, but with the advent of the 13th Amendment, which outlawed slavery, and also the 14th Amendment, it done away. The Constitution actually had about 7 slave clauses, not specifically talking about it, but the actions were directed at them. And
okay.
With those 2 amendments, they was overruled. They got done away with them, just like the Dred Scott decision.
Right.
Right. Now, it says here in Article 4, Section 2, Clause 2, a person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime, who shall flee from justice and be found in another state, shall on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled be delivered up to be removed to the state having jurisdiction of the crime. Arguably, if you're just minding your own business, that constitutional authority would not apply. But of course, nobody actually reads the Constitution. We read
we do.
What we want.
We do.
Right.
Well, I spent a lot of time actually telling people what's
not.
That's
right there, Jonathan.
Yeah.
He wasn't found. He was not found guilty. He was not sitting in the court to be found guilty. Then once he found guilty, he up and ran. Donald Trump's been in Florida.
Right. But the courts don't. You know, the courts don't. Deal with things that way, but they don't read the Constitution as it's written. They deal with things in other ways. So,
but that's a separate. That's a whole separate thing. The judiciary, and this is one of the things I want to get to. The judiciary has gone wild. They literally make stuff up. There is no judicial review power. They do it. I can see a limited, you know, on the basis of if they have a case before them, but the idea this judge, it's only a district attorney, right? Just district attorney for Manhattan, very limited jurisdiction, can haul in Trump from Florida. That makes no sense. And why is it being challenged on process and everything else? It's like, you can't do this A, because you don't have the authority, B, because you have a bogus, indictment, C, because your grand jury is biased. You know, I mean, where do these people come from? D, because we're going to charge you with prosecutorial misconduct. And E, we should, as I said, Ashley Moody should immediately indict or hold a grand jury on whether Brandon is actually president or not, which we know he isn't. So, I mean, there's so many ways to fight this that aren't being done because conservatives, as Pianki says, are a bunch of cowards. I agree. There's no fight.
Right.
There's no counter suit. There's no counter debate. There's no nothing. The only thing Ron DeSantis has done is that he's not going to help extradite. But he can do so much more positive than that. See, this is his test for 2028. This is why I think this is so important.
Trump is, according to reports, Trump is flying to Manhattan in 2 hours.
That's crazy.
So he's stupid. Not giving DeSantis an opportunity to to do anything.
Yeah,
See,
his strategy should be, you know, this is bogus. This is political. This has nothing to do with reality. These aren't even real charges. I said this is all made up, you know, in politics. And I said, what he should say is, I am not going to allow a non-judicial proceeding to go ahead that is simply a political operation. It's a political mission. That's what he should be saying. And so should every other Republican.
Right.
Where are they?
Mm-hmm.
Gutless cowards.
But the the thing is if you waive extradition, then then none of this matters. If you waive your rights, you know, if the FBI knocks on your doors and they say, can we look around? And you say, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Then it doesn't matter if they have a warrant or not.
Yeah.
Because you let them in. You know,
they should be required to say that. You know, and if you say yes, that means we don't have to have a warrant. And then people go, oh, well, in that case, no. You know, so the same thing with this. You know, if Trump goes up there, this is going to put him in such a vulnerable position because they're going to take photographs and all kinds of stuff. It's almost like saying that, you know, and I've heard this claim, well, you have to go up there and prove his innocence. First of all, you never have to prove your innocence. They have to prove guilt. I think they should be forced to prove this is actually a legitimate claim. And they're not being required to do that. People are assuming it's legitimate. Well, he made the charge. You know, no person's above the law. You know who's not above the law? Alvin Bragg, District Attorney of New York, is not above the law. And I think he's breaking it with this indictment. Jonathan?
Right. Right. Well, but the thing is, that's what the grand jury is supposed to do.
Hmm. Is it all secret? Can we see what they did? Or no? Hello, Jonathan? Am I still on the air? Hello? Anybody home? Pianki, you still there?
I can hear you.
Okay, good.
I can hear you.
Okay, good. Just because Blog Talk will just cut me out. Maybe Jonathan cut out. Hopefully, he's still on the line. But let me ask you. Are you there, Jonathan? Okay, good.
What?
So you cut out for a second.
I can hear you the whole time.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why.
Yeah,
but the thing is that, for example, the grand jury. This might be some legislation you should consider. Mm-hmm. It is that the grand jury should be required to be notified. I think they have a right to call their own witnesses. They have the right to do their own investigation, including as to the law. Like for example, if the prosecutor says that. Spending money for something that tangentially benefits your election, that's a campaign finance violation. When everybody knows anything, says, no, it's not. The grand jury has the power to call whomever they need to call to say, no, wait a minute, is this actually a crime? And the person says, no, it's not. But right now, they just take the prosecutor's word for it. And like I've seen grand jury documents we don't know if it's the same one, but the way they talk, it sounds like it's the same one. He's asking very uncomfortable questions.
And you know, he gets it. So he keeps asking them, now, what about, you know, wait, the Oath Keepers were there on January 6th to pursue their, you know, to do security.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts out with saying, like, what's that badge around his neck? You're telling me these people are here to do an insurrection, but they've been given a badge for their, you know, so how is it that, you know, why is it that they have a badge if they're, you know, if they're not there officially? And so they go through all this stuff, and you can watch step by step. You can watch the prosecutor lying to them, you know, leading them away from the, I mean, they clearly know what's up, and they know that it's bogus, and they're zeroing in on what's bogus about the indictment, and you can see the prosecutor deceiving them. And, you know, so that, but the part of the point is being that was one grand juror who was willing to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do that. But typically what happens is the grand jury just sits there and listens, and they do whatever the prosecutor asks them to do.
Yeah, this is why I think our jury instruction show is going to be so important. This week, no, because there's too much happening with Trump. But the whole idea, not only do juries should not be instructed by judges, they should actually instruct the judges. I believe now that, I don't know if we want to make it a separate bill or make it a part of it, but the grand juries, and I just wrote down here, Bill of Rights, Powers, and Options, you know, that the grand juries need to be instructed, you know, officially in a statement everybody knows about. You know, just like a Miranda thing for the juries, that they have the right to judge the laws and the fact of the case and nullify the case based on unjust laws or unconstitutional laws if that's what they find. And that's basically what my jury instruction bill says. But the same thing here, grand juries.
I think that's a very good way to describe it, because everybody knows Miranda so well. I mean, it's not literally the same thing, but, it, you know, if you could say it, you know, like Miranda notice.
That's actually
grand
a bill.
Jury.
It's called a Miranda notice.
That's it.
You know, yeah, yeah. But that's but shouldn't the grand jury have the same thing? Now the question is, do we do it in a separate bill or do we include it in that one? I'd probably do a separate one. But shouldn't people going into a grand jury know? It's like you know, if I was on a jury, I've been thrown off juries for telling the judge that I was going to follow the Constitution and I was going to judge the laws. That's my ability as a juror. Well, why do you have the ability to do that? You know, he says, you're going to make up laws as you go along. I said, because I represent the people and you represent the government. That's why.
Yeah, but that's pretty what. See, here's where everything is phony. Everything is a scam.
Uh-huh.
Because the grand jury and the trial jury, that's their purpose, is to stand between the judge and the system and the defendant. Their their purpose is to be a gut check. Saying, hold on a second, no, we're not buying that. And so if they say, you know, the jury is going to make up the law, yeah, that's why we have juries.
Yeah.
You know, why do you think we have juries? And so, you know, to say, hold on a minute, that doesn't sound right. I'm not buying that. That's what the jury is for. And you know, they need to be instructed in that, and it needs to be in the statute, not in the rules, not in the discretion of the judge,
right.
Not a suggestion. It has to be part. It has to be a statute that says, you know, if the jury shall be instructed, blah blah blah, and if they're not, the indictment is thrown out.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull that up now, but that's, I like the idea of the indictment being thrown out. And my computer seems busy running the show, so it's having a little trouble pulling it up. Oh, nope, here we go. Let me see if I can get this real quick. So for those that want to know, I'm going to writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. Clicking on legislation, clicking on all proposed laws, and this one's going to be the instructions for jurors, which I think I wrote it a couple of years ago. So this one's going to be back a little bit. I need an index for these. Let's go back. Let's just take a second to find it here. Pianka, do you have a comment on this while I'm looking real quick?
Well, let me say that, you know, because part of the problem is, part of the issue is that the grand jury can walk out of the, you know, can walk out of the grand jury process and be released, because the grand jury sits for a period of time, not just for one case.
Right.
And they release, and then they look at the meeting, and go, oh, my God, they lied to me. You know, I voted to indict based on what, on the narrow lens of what the prosecutor told me, and the prosecutor lied to us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of what we're dealing with. That the jury
and prosecutors can lie. You know, of all the laws that we live under, only 4% are voted on by Congress. The other 96% come from these bureaucrats. And courts are doing today what they were never designed to do, according to Madison and Hamilton. That stuff needs to be taught, needs to be straightened out.
Yeah, there are laws that are passed on the suspension calendar, which means that nobody opposes it. And then there are these massive, you know, omnibus bills that have, you know, Christmas trees, as they say. They have all kinds of things on them that have nothing to do with, you know, for example, when they passed the We Love Puppies Act of 2023, and then you read it, and there's 1,000 things that have absolutely nothing to do with loving puppies. It's all about, by the way, we can suspend the Constitution when we want, and, you know, it's illegal for you to criticize the government because puppies might feel bad about it.
We got Dorothy on the line. We're going to have to sum up here in a bit. But go ahead, Jonathan, then I want to briefly describe the bill that I have here. Yeah. No, it's a good point. You know, and in fact, this is procedurally, this is what we need to do. It's this nuts and bolts wonky stuff that people don't want to get into that is so critical that a regulation should not become a regulation unless Congress votes affirmatively for it. Anyway, so the...
Well, regulations, yes, but even most of the things that are passed by Congress, you know, the members of Congress never read.
Well, that's another problem. Anyway, let me just do this real quickly here. So the bill we're talking about is all juries, before deliberating, will receive a Miranda-type mandated instruction from all judges. And it says, and here's the instruction. You have the right to judge the laws as well as the facts of the case. And if you find the laws unjust or unconstitutional, you have the right, power, and duty to nullify the law or laws and can acquit or find not guilty on that basis alone. Pretty simple. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and to that, I would add, you have the right to ask questions of any witness brought before you or of your own witnesses that you decide to call on your own. You have the right to investigate any aspect.
Okay. Do you want me to adapt that for grand juries or just all, should this be all juries, just include grand juries?
It really applies to all juries.
Okay.
But nobody wants to tell them. Traditionally at law, but not traditionally in the last 200 years in our country. Traditionally, if the jury wanted to ask the witness questions, they could ask their own questions. Now they might, you know, the judge might say, okay, you need to submit them to me. I don't want chaos. But they would. They would submit questions to the judge, and the judge would maybe put them in. Of course, that's really dangerous. But you know, if five people ask the same question, he's only going to ask it once. That kind of thing. but they have a right to ask their own questions of the witness, and if they think that they need to call, you know, for example, if somebody says, "Well, you know, the Capitol is not open to the public." And a D.C. juror says, that's odd because I've been there. My school children, when I was telling you, I'd like to call someone on that and verify if that's true or not.
Yeah. Let me just hold you up because I really want to get to Dorothy for this hour. What I want to do is talk to you off the air, and I'm going to write something up. And I think no, this is huge, Jonathan. This is really important. I just can't do it at this particular moment. So what I want to do is write up extend the jury instructions to include sources, the Constitution, ability to look up laws, ability to call experts, ability to call witnesses, ability to know all their rights, powers, and options, and just actually add that to those instructions, which I think will make it a much better bill. So let me leave it at that. Any contact or any news or anything real quick, and then I want to get to Dorothy. But, gentlemen, thank you. Great discussion.
All right.
Jonathan?
Oh, just one of the controversies is whether the judge is going to issue a gag order to a man who's in the middle of a campaign for president. That would be,
oh, that's hysterical. Oh, that's funny. Just stop right there. That's perfect. Just end it there. Let me get to Dorothy, and away we go. This is our big change of the week. Yeah. Thanks, Jonathan. That's hysterical. I love that. Sex. Everybody talks about it. Some of you are even doing it. But are you really talking to the person you are doing it with? It all comes down to communication. That's where Dorothy Diana comes in. Dorothy is a sexual health nurse educator. She has studied hypnotherapy, Reiki, and many other disciplines. And what is sex without sensuality? Something has to light your afterburner. Join us now for a sometimes very frank and occasionally quite descriptive conversation of sex and sensuality with Dorothy Diana. You know, we really have to do some hours on the sex of politics and the politics of sex. We have to cross this bridge that we jump, you know, over the course of my intro into your segment here. But yeah, so much going on. So do you think wouldn't that be hysterical if this judge tried to say, well, you put a gag order on President Trump in the middle of his campaign? That would be friggin' hysterical. That would, you know. How does that hit you? I'm just curious. Then we can get on.
It's a movie. It's just a movie. I'm not sure how much I even believe or how much is crafted and how much is actually really happening. So
okay.
I don't know.
Right.
Sounds like a movie to me, doesn't it?
Well, we're definitely through the looking glass politics. In other words, everything's backwards. You know, the wrong person's in the White House. The wrong laws are being put out there. The wrong policies are there. The wrong executive orders. Everything's being done to hurt us. Our energy's being curtailed. Our freedom is gone. Our taxes are up. Inflation's up. The value of our money is down. Everything is backwards to what it should be. We're being flooded with illegals instead of kicking them out. You know, we're spending
billions.
Well,
you know what? Whenever,
go ahead.
Whenever we
Not
talk about
political.
Wrong and should, mm-hmm. whenever we talk about wrong and should be, I always think my initial go-to is, or maybe that's exactly how it should be, because, you know, we were all pretty ignorant, a lot of us, of the workings of the world prior to the pandemic. And so many of us from different perspectives, whether it was our passion for good education for kids or honest, informed consent healthcare that truly gets people well, or medical freedom, or, you know, civil rights when, you know, I don't want to get into the politics of what happened during the pandemic too much right now, but I think when we say wrong and should, a lot of these things that are so uncomfortable help wake more people up and actually have an end result that's quite beautiful. So, you know, I don't keep up too much with politics, what's happening right now, I'm not in agreement with, but I feel strongly it's going to be alchemized. Many people are coming together on things now.
Oh yeah, they've united the resistance and they've destroyed the compliant. It's just to put it bluntly, but this is a fascinating time.
Yeah,
and nothing is ever you know, as Dickens was right. It's the best of times. It's the worst of times. You know, it's the best of times in terms of technology and awareness and capability and things we can do. And it's the worst of times in terms of political oppression and absolute lawlessness and everything else. It's quite a fascinating time.
Mm-hmm. And anyway, all still have choices. And we all still to this day have choices. There's still land available to be bought, still other people we can have co-housing communities with and learn to grow our food. The information out there available for those who want to make a real change is huge. And that's still true. We're not yet in a fully communist society, and this is a great time for everyone to rediscover what it means for them to be human in this now moment. So I think it's very exciting. Right, a lot of choices.
Interesting.
Still.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's get on to what you want to talk about and think of it in terms of our choices and our power. I mean, that is a metaphor. I mean, like I said, we'll cross it a little bit. I don't want to get too much away from topic because I spend the whole rest of my week talking about that other stuff. This is why
well,
I like this hour.
Today we're talking. We're gonna continue last week's topic.
Okay.
Which we were talking about keeping things spicy, keeping sexual tension in relationships, creating and keeping it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sexual tension or intimacy tension, just the excitement of being with another human and keeping that butterfly feeling if possible. And I had a male friend ask me many months ago, and this stuck in my head, do you think that's even possible at our age, those butterflies?
What?
And I immediately, like, I
huh?
immediately kind of freaked out. And I said, of course it is. Are you kidding?
It better be.
It's not only possible, it's necessary. Let's, you know, so
can we tell what age we're talking about here? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, he's late 40s.
Late 40s. He's a baby.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm almost mid 60s. Right. And I get butterflies and I get excitement. And if I get a crush on somebody, it's going to be every bit as big as it was when I was like, what, 15. I don't see any difference.
So the typical
because I'm alive.
Of a relationship. The typical trajectory of a relationship is of a healthy relationship, and again, this is a broad sweep here, so bear with me, you know, is the butterflies, the getting to know, the physical attraction, which for a man is essential, for the masculine energy is essential, right? The physical attraction, and for the woman, it tends to be feeling safe and secure, feeling there's some romance, feeling he desires her, yes. And those butterflies are happening in the first few months. And then they start to morph for both members of the couple a little bit differently. They start to change. And generally for a healthy man, he may start to what the woman considers. And again, whenever I say woman and man, I'm being inclusive, so just bear with me. But the feminine.
Well, you think I jump on you every time you do this? Probably, but
no. I just for your listeners, I want to acknowledge that it's not, it's masculine energy and feminine energy. However
right.
that presents. So the masculine energy will start to, sometimes frequently, especially if they're healthy, begin to sort of go into their logical state as the relationship continues and begin to evaluate whether this is truly good for the long term, whether this makes sense, whether he can provide for her, whether he can make her happy, whether they're compatible. And that begins to maybe look like a pull away a little bit. And the feminine energy, if she's healthy, can breathe and ebb and flow with this and trust his leadership. And again, most relationships fall outside of that typically healthy. There's a lot of sometimes drama that can occur when these changes happen. But if the relationship makes it to the long-term committed stage and we want to keep things spicy, it's exclusivity, long-term, or marriage, I think most people want to still have those feelings of excitement and attraction about their partner. Because regular life comes in and it can be monotonous and it can be boring and it can be, you know, very demanding. So to be able to have those things in place that make your intimate relationship really special and a safe place and a fun place and like a wonderful harbor we can relax and enjoy each other in is quite lovely. So in marriage or long-term relationships, basically three components, the level of intimacy, which means emotional closeness, the communication between the couple, and the ability to manage conflicts as they come up. Kind of the feeling that nobody knows you better. This person has your back no matter what. So intimacy, that's how I'm defining intimacy. And
okay.
The second component is a feeling of thrill or excitement. Attraction, yes. Excited to see the person when they reunite, feeling like they're in love. And there's some things that can contribute to keeping this in place also. And then the third component is of keeping things spicy in the long term is the level of sensuality that's being provided, whether that's erotic sensuality, physical touch and cuddling, that oxytocin dopamine exchange, that energy connection that happens when you get physical with somebody else, skin on skin contact, and sex, the amount of sex, the amount that each member of the couple feels fulfilled during the sex and feels like they're getting their needs met, and that it's not just the same old every time, that there's a little bit of variety introduced, especially for the masculine energy. And that sex can be everything from, you know, kissing goodnight to holding hands to fondling to, you know, up against the wall.
Blacking out. Different rooms. Backseat of the car. Even if you don't have to. Oh, yeah, okay. Swimming pools.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So those three components, intimacy, thrill, and sensuality, and happy to break those down further. And how do we keep that? And there's some kind of basic tenets in place on those. Did you have any questions before I?
Oh, I always have questions. I think sometimes I jump in too fast in the conversation. but I was thinking as we're talking here that I don't think guys, and I could be wrong, but tell me what your experience is, that guys who are attracted to a woman never really lose that. They might lose, they could lose interest in doing activities. They could, they think that, you know, if that person, especially if a bad relationship, there's a betrayal that goes on. But really down deep at a physical level, guys, once they're attracted to a woman, are probably always going to be. Unless something, you know, and I think that's something, I don't think women are the same way at all. I think women are completely different.
You're correct.
In that,
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I agree with you. You're correct. Generally speaking, now let's be honest. At the risk of offending anyone, I'm just going to say it. Men are very visual, and if you come into the relationship, you know, with a certain weight, a certain hairstyle, a certain level of keeping yourself up, and you let that go, which women will do. A lot of women will do that when they're comfortable in a relationship. You know, especially if they saw their feminine role model do it. Yes. So we tend to emulate what we saw our mom or aunties do.
Yeah, and then dad discovered bowling and he discovered his favorite TV chair. So that's not necessarily a good thing.
And his beer and ooh and all that.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So
yeah.
I'm going to say this, smell good, look good, feel good. Smell good, look good, feel good. Exercise regularly, something that you enjoy. Keep your body generally in a great shape, so you can avoid cancer, diabetes, long-term chronic illness, and also you can be attractive to your partner. And once a woman has a few babies, the body does change and changes permanently. However, when a man's in love, he tends to only see her beauty. You know, there's a lot he'll forgive, and I think it's just
forgiveness,
a balance.
But it's just acceptance, because guys know that women's bodies change after kids. And look, yeah, you know, yeah, your wife's body has changed, but look, you got kids. You know, you wouldn't have it without the wife. You know, so I think that any guy that's looking at this, but I think it's women that totally let themselves go, that purposely become unattractive to their husbands and don't care and think, I'm married, you're stuck with me, this is the way it goes, you can't afford to divorce me. That's a turnoff. But still way down deep to think, you know what, if they were nice and changed, they might be still attractive somehow. So there's still
reflective of a low self-esteem. That's reflective of, that's not reflective of a healthy female. So there's other things going on if she's done that, in my opinion. There's other problems in place. So I don't, again, to delve too deeply into any, but there's times that if there's been a little hints of infidelity, she might do that, or too much pressure with the kids, little kids, and not enough support and overwhelm. But generally, to keep this sexual attraction for the masculine energy, smelling good, looking good, feeling good, right? So taking showers.
Yeah.
Right,
I think you guys are pretty easy to please. I don't think it takes a lot of effort, especially, like I say, because recognizing changes, recognizing age, recognizing weight and things like that, you know, especially you might encourage your partner or wife person to exercise together. You know, go for a bike ride. You know, go climb a mountain. I mean, there's so many things to do.
I mean, the wonderful
if you view it as a partnership. Go ahead.
This burly thing where you attach to the bike so you can put your babies in those, you know, those bike carrier burly things. So, you know, even if both couples are working, strap on the burly and go to the farmer's market, take the kids up a hill. You know, we used to do that. I would have one in the car seat or the bicycle seat on the back of my bike, usually the biggest one, which is a lot of weight going up a hill. and my partner would have the burly with either one or two, depending on how many kids we had at the time. And that's a workout. But, again, there's something for everybody, agreed. And there's always time to take care of your body. And there's sometimes arguments, oh, that's elitism, that's privilege to say that. No, there's always time to take care of your body. There's always time to park in the furthest parking spot and walk into work, But
yeah. Well, let me ask you
a
question.
No, really. Well, I used to park far away, and my kids would say, why are we parking so far away, Mom? And I'd say, because we're not obese or handicapped. This is what we do.
No, that makes sense. I took my daughter everywhere, and I was after my separation divorce, I became a weekend dad, but I always had her butt moving somewhere. We're always going places. Mm. I said, we're not sitting still. We're not doing the whole world. This is the beauty of living in San Francisco back before
the whole world,
collapsed.
The more you see and learn, the more expanded you get.
Take her everywhere. We had a great time. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
you can't
intimacy,
hide from the world living in living in San Francisco. You can't hide from much living in San Francisco.
Well, we used to talk about that. It said we can travel the world or we can walk around the neighborhoods of San Francisco. It's pretty much the same thing.
That's right, and especially now. Okay, So intimacy, allowing the other person to be truly themselves, not trying to change them. This is really important. They say men go into relationships hoping she doesn't change, and women go in hoping she can change him. And that's a generalization, yet there's a lot of funny truth to that. So women,
it's also a prescription for disaster.
Do-it-yourself project.
I had a girlfriend say to me once, she says, I've been with you, I forgot how too much time it was. She said, I've been with you all this time. And she said, and you haven't changed a bit. And I said, thank you. That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
Okay.
That's a true story,
that's
by the way.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, you haven't changed a bit. I'm like, well, why did you want me to, why would you want to be with somebody you want to change? See, this is where intimacy, this is a turnoff for guys. Huge turnoff. Why would you want to change me? If you don't like me as I am,
let's
go out with me.
Let's address that.
Go ahead.
Let's address
please.
That. So women enjoy being therapists. We do it for each other all the time. And there's a few things going on here. One, if you're someone else's therapist, you can ignore your own problems. You can ignore your own, right?
That's very interesting.
So that's one.
Okay.
That's one reason. Uh-huh. Another reason is the caregiver energy truly does want to help. But what helping really looks like versus what we think it is two very different things. So helping someone else from a place of true love, compassion, and connection really looks like listening, feeling out what they want, what are their actual goals for themselves, what stage are they in of self-improvement, are they really just needing a place to talk, are they looking for strategies, are they looking for advice, and not jumping in with what you think they need to hear, but just being there, loving them for who they are right now, and being supportive if and when they want to change and being excited for them. And, women do love these projects, taking, dating a man and then discovering the wrong things about him and trying to help him change.
Well, what if she's
that's
discovering
really
the wrong
selfish
things about
really
her? Wait a minute. So this is a huge point with me. All right. Because if she discovers the wrong things about him, then she's looking at everything from her point of view as if she's right and he's wrong. And this is what I think happens. This is a huge flaw that I think needs to be addressed, that if women would not necessarily look at the guy and see his flaws, but maybe disagreements or things that she might not agree with. And let's settle this early. Let's get back to our relationship contract.
Okay. So, Greg, also, this is why you date for a long time. Yeah, well, you're right, and I'm agreeing with you. This is why you date for a long time, though. And you don't go in trying to change a person. You go in watching and waiting and listening, and then deciding if that's for you or it's not for you, right? And because they're not going to change. In fact, generally, tell me if you agree, Greg, in marriages it tends to get more. Whatever is going on wrong, or the problems, people tend to get a little more lazy.
Well, especially
more,
if they get resistant. But here's the thing, though. If a woman's attracted to a man and there's certain things that she loves about him, why would those things not be – why would she want to change that? See, to me, it's a contradiction.
She's not changing the things she loves. The things she loves right away, she's noticing. And then as the relationship continues, she's noticing the things she doesn't love more and more.
But you got to accept those. Mm-hmm. That's part
of the package. I don't want to keep saying she. I want to say they, because men do it also. It's not just women that do this, although it tends to be the feminine energy that will begin to sometimes look inside and whatever gaps
I've never
are there
heard
in her
a guy.
Heart.
I've never heard a guy say, my girlfriend's great, and once I change her, she's going to be even better. I've never heard
they're not
going
to say those, and I've never heard a woman say that, but it's little things. Like,
really?
A man might say, you know, yeah, maybe you should wear – there are many men that will, you know, once they're in relationship, try to get her to dress a little sexier or do this with her hair, or that does exist, but I think it's more the feminine energy. But I don't want to stay on that too long. So allowing the person to be themselves, not trying to change them, just moving closer to the relationship or further away if it's not meeting your needs, right? And everyone's welcome to say, you know, this is something that I think I need, or that's for me personally missing. I just want you to know, and then maybe give them a chance. Most people won't change, but you know. Okay, love languages. Well, I love the love languages. We're talking about
before you
intimacy.
Start, I want to make one more point before you get away from this, just because I think it's critical, because we talked about when women feel safe to be intimate. We haven't talked about when guys feel safe to be intimate. And I think that there's a lot. Okay. I think one of the things that you just talked about is huge, the idea of if she changes him, he'll be fine. One of the ways that guys, I think, shrink from intimacy is thinking that they're not going to be approved of. And the quickest way for guys to be approved 100%
agreed. Feeling like – no, I agree with you. Feeling
okay,
like who they come to the table as isn't good enough. Mm-hmm. Who they come to the table so that she's not actually wanting an intimacy with him. She's wanting intimacy with this idea of him just to have closeness with somebody. So yeah, I agree with you. And
okay.
I feel like this conversation today is actually both genders. I'm not talking about one or the other more than so the other person needs to feel that they can be themselves. That being said, I believe in the love languages. I know not everyone thinks they're legit. So far from everything
I've
seen,
they are. Why
would
they not be legit? They make sense.
Well, some people say, they're just, you know, because some people don't want to try. Some people don't want to do the work. Some people want to just think if they just show up, whoever they are, that should be enough. And yes, on some level, but why wouldn't you do everything you can to make the person you love feel happy? If I know that taking long walks makes you happy because it's quality time, if I know that working on a project together makes you feel close, if I know that, you know, flowers or a little gift here and there doesn't have to be expensive, really makes you feel loved, why wouldn't I do it? I absolutely would. So love languages are simple, they're easy to fulfill, and when they really make the person feel loved, I say, why not? They're going to fill that bucket, and that bucket leads to more intimacy and people feeling good. So I advise people look at the love languages, the 5 love languages, take the free online quiz, identify which one is you, which one's your partner, and just do it. And make yourself a commitment weekly or daily to check those boxes off. You know, whatever your partner's is, it's going to have massive rewards, massive for both people.
I think.
Okay. Good list.
I was going to say, speaking from a guy perspective again, I know this applies. There are both men and women who categorize as both of the things we talked about. But since I'm a guy, I tend to speak from a guy perspective. You speak from a woman perspective. That makes only sense. But I think that the guys, you know, the whole idea of working a relationship, we need to sort of talk about that for a minute. Because guys work at work. Guys work at all kinds of things. The last thing they want to do is think of their relationships as work. It's supposed to be, that's supposed to be the relief. That's supposed to be the fun time. That's supposed to be the sanctuary from the world. That's supposed to be the place you can tell your partner everything. Yeah, today really sucks, you know, because women want that too. I mean, this is probably one of the things that does cross over. But it's not so much that I think men and women are that different. I think that men a lot of times the needs and opinions and ideas and securities have been neglected, and that it's always looked at from a woman's point of view. She needs this, she needs that. If there's a problem, you know, he's the cause. You know, if a man hits a woman, he's violent. If a woman hits a man, then he's a jerk. You know, it's that
let's
kind
not
of
get
thing.
Off. Let's not. I understand what you're saying. Love languages meets both people's needs. Love languages, when you identify, no matter what energy someone's in, when you identify their love languages, that meets a need. And if I consider it work to tell you that, wow, your muscles are so big, they're so sexy, or if I consider it work to pick up a beautiful leaf off the sidewalk that's your favorite color and say, I saw this, it reminded me of you, or, I mean, I'm just giving random examples, or I'm,
no,
you know,
I'm
the grocery store, I see the beef jerky that
you know, I love picking up leaves and colorful things.
Well, whatever it is, that's a gift love language. Or if I go to the grocery store for my regular shopping and I see beef jerky and I see an amazing flavor and I know you love that, why would I not grab it for you? So I don't consider this work, and I feel like when you really love someone, it's not work. So we can change the word work for intention, attentiveness, consciousness, whatever we want to, we want to say it. It's being intentional about a love connection where you're giving love and you're showing love and you're open-hearted. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm. Okay. So So space for the other person's differences. We talked about that a little bit. And I, on the notion of space and the masculine energy, I do want to throw out that intimacy for the masculine energy can sometimes look like space, sometimes needs some space, right? Without the woman feeling completely neglected, and if he doesn't text her all day, or if he just seems to be like needing a little bit of space for himself, sometimes that is how he regenerates or reinvigorates himself and pieces out a little bit, so then he can come back to the table with everything that she needs. So I think the topic of space is important for intimacy when it comes to masculine energy. Did you want to talk on that?
Always. I always come back to my basic contention that women feel free when they're secure and men feel secure when they're free. So in other words, it seems to work.
Yes.
Not that men want to sleep around and have multiple relationships. I mean, some guys do because they're pigs. But I mean, the guy that wants to be in a relationship needs to feel free within that relationship, and the freedom, in other words, freedom to take a space, the freedom to maybe not talk, the freedom to hang out with the guys, you know, the freedom to do things. 100%. Doesn't mean they want to leave the relationship, and doesn't mean that the woman is any less valuable. In fact, they're probably more valuable because of the freedom. But you cannot take guys who are free creatures by nature and suddenly put a relationship that takes away that freedom. See, I believe a relationship should give you more freedom. You've got a person you can do wonderful stuff with. You can travel, you can have fun, you can talk about everything, but there's a freedom.
Yeah,
and I don't think that freedom that guys need, not the freedom to leave the relationship or abuse it, but just the freedom within it, within that framework. I don't think that gets talked about enough.
Well, I think that that's hugely important. And I think you're 100% right. And what does that look like? And what needs is that meeting for the masculine energy is a great deep dive topic. I think your listeners might want to explore on their own. Why does the masculine energy need freedom and space, and why it's so beneficial for the feminine energy to give that, and how it will reap rewards in the long run if she gives that willingly. Again, within the boundaries of the relationship. You know, if we have an agreement, you know, I feel like it's a little unfair to have a regular, consistent type of connection and suddenly drop it. And I think it'd be kind to have a conversation. And, you know, I'm going to give an example from something in my life. I have a very close guy friend who suddenly got very busy at work after a few months in an intimate relationship where he was very, very available physically a lot of the time. And he was able to communicate that quite effectively and often to his feminine energy partner that heads up, I'm not going to be as available. And that was a little shocking and disconcerting for her. And if there's some insecurities present, she may not be able to hear that right away. She may still be interpreting it in her own heart. And that's when doing your work comes into play. But I love that communication. I feel like that was a very honoring thing to do. It gave her many heads up that this is going to be happening. Yet,
and doesn't mean he wanted to see her any less. Yeah. And had circumstances been different, he, you know, they probably would have the same level of physical activity. But I always think back to I remember Wilbur Wright, who invented the airplane with Orville. Wilbur did most of the work, and asked about you're not married. How come? He says, I don't have time for a wife. I'm thinking to myself, how many inventions and how many things wouldn't happen? Because guys generally do most of the inventing, creative. The stupid dreamers out there are guys, let's face it. The people that want to discover and go voyage into strange places and create action radio and all the things we guys do. If there's a woman in our lives that says, well, that's a stupid idea, what do we do that for? You know, that's what I mean by the freedom. The freedom to dream, the freedom to do. What if, Steve Wozniak's and Jobs' wives said, don't go in that garage and make a computer. It's dinner time and we need furniture and you need to paint the walls. What are you doing? What kind of idiot are you? We never have a computer. You know.
Well,
so,
I think whenever you're calling names or insulting someone, she gives examples of very strong language. If you condescend, if you insult them, I feel like you're in a place already where there's some major red flags. Nobody needs to be in a relationship where they're being called names or insulted. Okay. But on a lesser level, like a little like less extreme, that you're right, that restriction can take place in many subtle ways. And if she doesn't allow him to go and take care of business outside of the relationship, I don't think that's much security for her in the physical world if she's with him.
And he may not allow her to have a relationship with him either. See, the ultimate is, you know, that the guys at some point are going to say, wait a minute, I can't do this. I can't, you know, create
right.
and do
that's
be who I want to be
man. Yes,
in
agree.
This relationship. So it's always interesting coming at this from the feminine point of view. She's going to allow him to do this. And I'm like, that's you can't look at it that way. Because if you look at it, she's going to allow, then she's controlling
the
relationship.
Well,
that's one of the problems.
Not going to even, the masculine's not going to be in that energy. So we can use whatever words we want. She's not going to allow him. A masculine man before entering a marriage, if that is in place, is probably uh-huh. not going to go there. Because the masculine energy will take care of what they need to and let her go if she can't handle that. So,
yeah.
Okay. So having your boundaries in place, this falls under intimacy too, and we're talking a lot about this. So what do I actually need to be in place to feel comfortable in this relationship? And can he, will he meet those needs and vice versa? Uh-huh. What does he need to be in place? Is it freedom? Is it space? Is it a certain amount of physical sex that's interesting and she seems to enjoy it and she reciprocates and she makes me feel sexy? I mean, sex is a great way to connect mm-hmm. with the masculine, right? And
well,
hopefully
hey, listen,
with the feminine
the more
too,
women
but,
enjoy sex, mm-hmm. the more sex you're going to get. It's just that simple. You know,
yeah.
Nothing encourages like positive reinforcement. You know, it's just
absolutely.
You know,
remember
we talked about this like a week or two ago. That the greatest way mm-hmm. to you know get more attention and affection is to be give attention and affection. You know, it's almost like you're
yeah.
giving the permission to go ahead. In other words, guys can lead. Well, here's what it was. We talked about guys are perfectly comfortable leading when the women's already said it's okay. You know, because why would you get rejection or be a nasty, you know, boorish clod, I think is the expression.
I mean, there's so many ways to lead sexually, and a woman is very sensual and receptive to many different approaches. So
and we guys really appreciate that. I want you to know, you know, because we're, yeah. you know, we're guys.
Even a certain eye, even a certain look of the eyes, even a certain body posture, mm-hmm. a certain quietness, a certain presence, a certain, I mean, really, but okay. So having your boundaries.
No, this is a good topic.
On topic here, having your
yeah,
boundaries
no, but,
in place, honoring theirs. So it,
right.
a boundary could be the amount of sex we have. The boundary could be how many times a week do I see you? How many times a day or times a week do I hear from you? Do you meet my love languages? Do you try? I mean, there could be a lot of boundaries. So just knowing them and holding them and allowing the other person to be themselves without expecting them to change.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a marriage, there's usually, hopefully, if it's a healthy marriage, these have all been discussed ahead of time. And so I
no, you know they're not.
Check-ins.
You know they're
well,
not. You've got to check in regularly on these. I think love language should be might require some frequent visiting and some little attention.
So we want
here.
Regular check-ins, weekly or monthly, I believe, are good, depending on the couple, what they agree on. Regular check-ins and how is this going for you? You know, how was this month for you? Was there any areas of concern? Are you feeling like I'm filling your bucket? Are you feeling connected? Are you feeling sexually fulfilled? Are you feeling like I'm pressure? You know, like anything, like having the conversation, check in how the relationship is going, I feel like is very important because hopefully you established your boundaries prior to the marriage and what you need to be in place and everyone agreed on it. But are we still honoring those? Has anything shifted?
I think everything shifts over. I think because people change, that I think everything shifts. I think this is I think this is part of the relationship. This is one of those things that makes relationships exciting, is the reevaluation. Hey, where are you now? You know, have you changed?
Yeah.
You know, do you want me more? You know, I mean, that's a good thing. You know, because as people
mm-hmm.
grow and become closer partners, why wouldn't you? You know, it's like, yeah, this is
yeah.
great, but I think, you know, we should go to Switzerland because I've always wanted to go. Hey, there's a great idea. You know, I mean, whatever
yeah,
it
I'm
is.
Yeah, I'm feeling
but,
restless. My job
yeah.
is making me feel very bored and restless. I'm feeling unfulfilled more and more.
Yeah, got
and
any
I'm
ideas?
Feeling very anxious. Like, yeah,
yeah.
like, can we do, like, I have to stay in this job, I feel like, for another year. What should
right.
we do to, like, you know, outside of my work, let's make it worth it. I don't know. Something.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if we have time today to thrill, but I think we probably do.
We do.
We
still
so
got
thrill and
21 minutes plus overtime. We, you know, we do have a little overtime.
Well,
if you're off, so gonna,
I'm not overtiming. You know. I'm on a schedule. Greg, I bought a house.
You're such a
and,
dude. God, you're
so I'm so excited.
Well, something about
I don't love schedules, but I have to today because I'm honoring the commitment I made to another female for 11:30, and it's all very good things. So.
Mm. Well, tell me about the house.
Yeah. So I bought a house, and so now I'm kind of in crunch time because I need to get out of my rental and thank you. Very exciting.
That was the guy cheer. Yeah. Okay, so now wait a minute. So this is empowering for you, right? So if we can put this on a personal level, because you've bought houses with other people, I take it, and this is the first one that you've bought. How am I doing? You
know, well,
or not? It's up to you because you know I don't have to get too personal, but I'm just curious. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was in a marriage, and I was a homeschooling mom, and you know I'm a nurse, and I have sort of my forte. I was very good around the home and with the health.
Very caring, and very, very, very caring, supportive things. No, it's great. I'm not criticizing. Just
categorizing. Well,
I'm sorry.
So yeah, no, that's okay. Yes. So and he was very managing the finances and his businesses and all this. And we bought several houses that I didn't realize until we got separated that none of them had my name on the title. And the way he'd arranged it with estate attorneys and all this is I didn't have any legal right to any of them. I could have gone to court and probably done pretty well because I don't think any judge would. But I didn't want to. So anyway, I processed all that. And so now I moved forward and I go, okay, well, I'm going to have a house that has my name on it now. So I had
Yay.
To learn how to find a house and learn how to, you know, negotiate and due diligence and inspectors and all this stuff. And so far, so good. I'm in the beginning stages, but I did a manifestation vision board. I did a mantra my friend gave me on how to call in the universe's energy for the perfect house. And once I started doing those things, within 2 weeks, this house came up and I went. And anyway, so it's looks like it's my
now,
house.
Visualization, let's apply visualization to relationships, or in my case, a jet, because I've already visualized my jet. I just don't have the money for it yet. But we have to break through a whole bunch of a big tech censorship, and that's another story. But as far as visualization goes, it's really important. You know, as I'm visualizing, you know, my next girlfriend, I'm actually sort of taking that step. It was probably time I had a girlfriend. Thinking to myself, this is why I said to you, knowing me as you do, you know, if you like sort of like direct some categories in my general direction of what you think, you know, where I should be looking, what kind of person, that'd be fascinating. I think that'd be an interesting study if I can get that personal on my own show. But this might be an interesting journey. And then I'll bring that person on the air. You can say, oh, you're the one that got him. Okay, fine. That might be kind of fun too. I don't mind breaking some bounds here. But here's something interesting to think about too, as far as the house goes. And this is, I absolutely believe in individual empowerment. And possessions can be benefits or burdens. And so the ex that took all those houses without your name on the title, given the housing market, they might be costing more than the benefit. So he might have done you a favor. You know, did you ever look at it that way? That by not being responsible.
I always look at it that way. I always look at like when I'm in touch with God and I pray and I'm in my vibrant radiance, gratitude radiance, excitement about life and curiosity of what's next, what the universe is going to give me, it always alchemizes. So have I been sucked down into a negative spiral this year? Oh yes.
Well, you're not. I mean, we're all human. We have our petty moments, and I'm really good at them occasionally too. You know, when I want to buy the radio station for the guy that fired me, it's like I think about buying a radio station for the guy that fired me, and fire him. Just, I mean, it's petty. It's purely, it's just a stupid idea, but it's fun to think about. Doesn't mean I'd actually do it. It's fun to think about. You know, so yeah, petty has its place. We should talk about that too. Anyway,
okay,
back to
so I don't believe it's a high vibrational place to be at all, and I believe that if we have someone who loves us, a friend, they might listen for a minute and then they might coax us out of that. But okay, I'm going to talk about thrill before we're out of time.
Okay.
So how do we keep the thrill, that sense of butterflies, the sense of I'm so excited to see this person, I'm in love with them, I'm still attracted to them. And I have a few ideas, and I'm sure you will too.
Let's hear your ideas.
I wish my dog would stop barking out there. But
I don't hear it. It's not coming through.
I have a good guard dog, so I should be grateful. He does guard from little old ladies with walkers and school children also. So I haven't really learned to discern appropriate guarding.
Yes. Okay. Appropriate reactions. That's important for relationships too, by the way. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Discernment. Okay. So
back to the thrills.
I want to I want to briefly touch on giving space when needed as adding to the excitement, the ebb and flow. And how does the feminine energy give space? We get super happy. We do our things we love. We go to yoga. We get our hair done. We get our nails done. We invest in our business we're creating and or that we've already created, and we make it fabulous and rewarding by surrounding ourselves with supportive staff who are aligned with us. We take little trips with our girlfriends. We fix up our homes. Again, the feminine energy, like what kinds of things nurtures the feminine energy. You get super involved in that. And then when you reconnect with your lover, with your partner, you share that with completely open heart and excitement and share your feelings about, you know, how all the wonderful things you're doing. And that sort of feeds his energy. That sort of is a lovely, titillating, painting a beautiful picture way to reconnect with the masculine energy, yes? So you're giving him his space because you're taking your own amazing bucket filling, all these activities you're doing, these wonderful things, and you're having this amazing life outside of the relationship, not depending on him for all your needs. And he's going out and doing his thing and coming back and reconnecting, and you get to hear about it with each other, right?
Well, let's think about that for a minute, because I think that's absolutely critical, that if she, whoever she is, wants to do her thing and he wants to do his thing, and of course they're still in the relationship and everything's fine, they don't have any conflicts, that's great. But I'm thinking also there's a place to give space where you do things together. So in other words, to a guy, if a woman says, you know, I want to sit in that tree stand with you while you're bow hunting. You know, and then he says, oh, that's so cool. I want you, you know, and who knows what was going on in the tree stand. I think giving space actually means joining with the man. So if women want to give space, in other words, say, here's my space. I want to give you space and I want to do what you do. I want to try things that you try. I want to see why you find this exciting, why you think that, you know, flying aerobatics upside down at 10,000 feet is a thrill.
For me, I put that in the category of shared activities. So giving space for me
you don't think it's the same thing?
What I'm thinking about that is...
No, I think it's a crossover. I think it's sharing and giving space at the same time.
Okay.
Think about that one.
So, sure. Okay. Yeah. So giving that space when needed can help.
Sure.
Yes, it's lovely. Fine. And I think shared activities is really great. And I think we're falling under the category of compatibility also there. And accepting the person for who they are and being able to enjoy time together, high quality activities together. So quality time, love language. You know, you like to bow hunt. Is that something you need to take your
energy? I've never actually tried
to get
it. That'd be interesting.
Not you. I mean your partner, the imaginary person. Is this something he wants to include her on? I'm sure if the relationship is good and the communication is intact, he would not hesitate to invite her. And if she's kind of open-minded and willing and has been kind of cool, you know, in general, she's either going to say no or yes, and he's going to love her either way. So she's going to say, no, that's really not my thing, but please take pictures and I'm so proud of you. And, you know, how can I connect with you on that activity in a different way? I can, you know, help you shop for your stuff ahead of time. I can pack your, you know, help you pack
Let's
your food
get a bow.
Or whatever.
Yeah. And he could say,
so,
let's
she,
get an
Or
antique.
She wants to do it. And I know lots of homeschooling moms several homeschooling moms that love to bow hunt, and it's kind of cool. I have a friend, I call her, well, anyway, she's like homeschool Barbie, and she looks like Baywatch, but she's got like a deer hanging on her front porch that she's dressing. And I'm like, who are you? You're so cool. But shared activities and finding your space within those activities, like how much am I involved, in which case, how much do I support you? Do I support you from a distance, listening to how it's going, or do you need me to be there with you, and in which case I can say yes or no? Okay.
Okay.
So scheduling adventures together, I was going to this next, in and out of bed, yes, creating a thrill. So adventures that increase our cortisol and our happy feelings and our excitement feelings, and we've talked about that before, flying airplane, or it doesn't even have to be that simple. If I go for a walk in the woods and there's a log across the creek and I'm a little afraid of heights, and my partner dares me to walk across and join him on the other side, and I do it, that to me is an exciting, connected activity, and now we're giggling, and maybe I fell in, and but it can be little things, and in and out of bed. So find those little things that create excitement and fun in your day-to-day. And then we've talked about infusion variety.
You've hit upon a huge subject. I don't think you've even realized it. But the idea of in and out of bed. In other words, if you have a real relationship that's a positive, sensual, attentive and just, you know, spicy and all the things we talked about, intimacy, attraction, sensuality, then in and out of bed, there's not that much difference other than the fact that you're having, you know, maybe wild sex in the bed. But in terms of attitude, in terms of flirting, in terms of communication, I think one of the biggest problems is that we consider relationships, there's a relationship in bed and there's a relationship out of bed. And I just don't see it that way. I mean, I think I see it a continuum. Mm-hmm. Dorothy?
Yes, I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Okay. Scheduling fun things in and out of bed. And so we've talked at length before
wait a minute. You haven't answered the question yet, but do you see a continuum that in and out of bed is a continuation of the same kind of thing attitude-wise? Not what you're physically doing, but that your attitude of in bed, out of bed, unless you just look at it completely differently, in which case tell me because I'm curious. But I see it much more... The hand-holding, the eye looks that you talked about earlier, the flirting, that kind of stuff, that's both in bed and out-of-bed activity. You know, so I don't see a difference. I think if you're going to maintain your attraction, you maintain your attraction in bed and out of bed. You're not attracted in bed and then total strangers out of bed. I don't see – the separation of the two is one of the big problems in relationships.
Okay, so
– New thought. Okay.
Well, I'm just going to wait for a so not everyone, some people are more uninhibited and experimental in bed, and they're a little more organized and not creative outside of bed. And some people are sort of that way in their lives as a continuum. So
wait a minute. Let me ask your point of view as an expert on women, being one. You know, do you see a continuum, or do you see I'm in bed now, I'm going to do this, or I'm out of bed, I'm going to do this, I'm going to behave differently? Do you see it as vast differences within a relationship? Not talking about so much the actions, but the attitudes and the mental processes and the feelings, the emotions. Is there that big a difference between in bed and out of bed in terms of your feelings about another person?
I'm really not sure. So
That's fine.
I've
stumped the reporter.
I don't think there's a rule here. I think everyone's a little different here. I don't think there's a rule. I think that if you want to keep,
a
feeling of, I think that there's a huge variety there. And, but if you want to keep, the excitement and the thrill in your relationship, you know, you think of ways to bring it to the table. So no matter, you know, throughout the day.
Here's what I'm thinking. If the only excitement of your relationship is in bed, then you're missing. You know, how much time do you spend in bed? You know, awake. You know, but if you talk about your waking time in bed is not a huge portion of your day or night. So if that's where all the fun stuff in your relationship is happening, you're missing all the potential fun stuff that could be happening outside of bed. I think I'm onto something here. I'm curious to see if you think about this and come back next week with some different or just more detailed observations. But I think I'm onto something, which is why I'm bringing it up.
Mm. Okay. Mm. So yeah. So the feelings of cortisol and adrenaline.
Okay. Change the subject.
Well, I'm not trying to. I'm just trying to finish thrill. And,
okay.
All
right.
Yeah.
You've got an agenda. You got a schedule.
Yeah. Well,
your masculine
like
energy is coming through. Okay,
I'd like
sorry.
To try to finish if we can, because I like to do what I committed to. But happy to explore that topic another time. I think we do talk a lot about variety in bed already. Mm-hmm. Okay, so other things that contribute to thrill, the feelings of thrill in relationship, which is one of the three components, is thinking of this variety and how you can introduce that, whether it's cook the food you cook and or the dates you schedule, or you know, we've talked at length about dressing up and role play, but just thinking of the psychological components of what makes someone excited and providing that, being aware of it, being intentional that and some people have more of a need of that than others. Some people don't need that, and I would say the masculine energy appreciates that somewhat. And another, so we already talked about space giving, which is hugely important. And then the last component of sensuality, I feel like we've talked of that a lot, but let's do it again in terms of keeping things spicy and keeping sexual tension in a long-term relationship. So not to be biased towards any certain gender, but the feminine energy tends to provide the sensuality a little more. That's a feminine energy gift. It's a genius. And that's everything from candles and low lighting to, you know, the pleasant home environment, the aesthetics, having a safe, comfortable, relaxing place for the masculine energy to come home to. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, let's
right.
ask a blunt question. Mm-hmm. How much thrill is it for women to like totally turn on their guy? What does that do for women? Speaking of sexuality.
A woman needs to feel desired. The feminine energy needs to feel desired.
Okay.
So, and I don't believe
that
she needs to. I don't believe that if she's in her true self-confidence
mm-hmm.
and her true feminine, she has sunk deep into her feminine energy, which then ends up being expressed through how she dresses, how she does self-care. It is a natural process. She is not going to have to put a lot of effort to seduce. She's going to literally be seductive in and of her magnetism, in and of her complete self-love, care, and the masculine's going to be very drawn to that. That being said, once a relationship is pretty long, a long-term relationship, it might be fun to play games of seduction and to do a little extra and to dress up and things like that and initiate sex. And I think each couplehood sort of figures its own way when both people are really healthy. They kind of figure their own way through that, what works, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Mm-hmm. So cuddling.
Well, I think that this is one of the big mm-hmm. myths. I think women love to seduce, and I think men love to be seduced. We don't talk about it much, but this is the hour for that. Let's talk about all the things
mm-hmm.
that we don't talk about. You know, so that's what makes it so interesting, I think. But yeah, I'm just wondering how empowered do women feel? See, if I can't ask you, I can't. Who else can I ask? You know, the fact that we're here on the radio. But
what
how empowered do women feel?
How empowered do
women feel like totally turning a guy on? I'm just curious.
I don't know about empowered. I feel like a woman's feminine energy needs to be desired and to be seen. So it's a need.
But she's creating that. I'm talking about from the positive aspect of a woman creating that desire. Just curious.
Right. And she in and of herself will create it when she's just completely being herself and happy. So
mm-hmm.
are you talking about like her taking specific actions or?
No. Well, no, just the idea. Of first of all wanting to do it, and secondly, you know, having the results, you know, be what you know whatever she's expecting. You know, the guy's like, yeah, great idea.
For most people
with
a strong feminine energy, if they don't feel desired, there's going to be problems. So I think for most women with a strong feminine energy, she sort of expects a natural desire mm-hmm. to be taking place. And
okay, let's say she does feel desired. She feels comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
She's all set. And
mm-hmm.
then she says, you know, hey, I'm going to totally turn my guy on. You know, what does that do for women? I'm just curious.
That's fun.
Like I say.
That's
okay.
Thrill. That's variety. That's creativity.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
that's giving pleasure. That's, I think for the feminine energy, that's fun. That's playtime. That's something she'll reward with, and please don't take that the wrong way because this is a very innate thing. This is not a conscious reward, but this is something that naturally will be a reward that's given to him when she has her needs met.
I don't think
this is
going to
come. Yeah.
No, it sounds
okay,
fine.
Right.
It makes sense. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I try not to be judgmental.
Be,
I just try and just make sure that all possible points of view are represented, or actually just to be able to ask questions that I can't, you know, ask.
Yeah.
So
she will probably enjoy curling her hair and maybe putting on something pretty before he comes home and
mm-hmm.
maybe something subtly seductive where he's not quite sure if she's trying or if she just happens to look that hot or something overtly spicy and fun. And again, that's when the feminine energy spilled up, gotten their needs met, committed exclusive long-term relationship, knows where she stands and knows where it's going. You know, these are the type of rewards that will come naturally and that will be part of the relationship. And when they're not in place, either a conversation happens, a super open, wonderful communication, which we have in place because we have all these other things in place, or then he kind of, you know, is going to have to figure out if he needs to have that and if that's just never going to happen. Is she never going to, you know, dress up, be sexy, and be a little seductive, and he needs that. And why is that not in place? And again, this is all things we discover, hopefully, in the dating process.
No, we need to do a show on rewards, because rewards are critical. In other words, you know, the thing you do for yourself, for your other person, is going to get your, you know, rewards. You know, the benefits of putting into the relationship are going to come back hugely for both people. You know, men and women. It's different rewards, different things. You know, again, the whole concept of freedom versus, I wouldn't say freedom versus security. That's probably not a good way to put it. But the interaction of freedom and security is probably a better way. That, again, I see things as very fluid, probably more so than most people. And so that might be, when you talk about masculine and feminine energy, I see masculine and feminine energy. And this is, I think we just look at things a little differently in that regard. Anyway, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about these chemicals you mentioned at some point, oxytocin, dopamine, and cortisol. And I want to know how much chemically sex is actual a chemical reaction. We can talk about pheromones too, because that's we do a lot with the emotional and the spiritual, but actually the actual physics of this might be interesting too. Anyway, You got a schedule. You got a house to buy. Or a person
I
to
do.
Meet.
I have things some to do. Exciting things to do today. Really, really good things.
Well, congratulations. I'm
fun
happy for
as
you.
Always. Hopefully, thank you. Hopefully we were helpful to your listeners, and maybe this stimulated future topics. I think definitely.
Oh, I think it stimulated a lot of things. I think every time we talk, we stimulate something out there. And just in terms of just getting people at least thinking, or, you know, getting their emotions going. And maybe they'll look at their partner differently. I mean, that's what I'm hoping. Ultimately, people will look at their partners differently and say, huh, that's an idea. Let me try that.
And they have different needs. And the masculine energy has different needs than the feminine energy, period. And
agreed.
To love and respect both and be really happy being with that energy is really important, and keeping that polarity, you know, stay in your lane. Don't step on the other person's toes. If you have the masculine energy, let him lead, let him be that. And if he's not doing a good job, don't enter into a long-term relationship with him, period.
Yeah.
And
vice
versa.
Agreed. Yeah. I'd love to know any feedback you have, because I know folks listen who are more into this topic. I mean, a lot of, you know, my regular folks and my reporters don't say, hey, Greg, great sex talk today. I don't hear that. So any feedback that you have, I'd be curious about, because, you know, so many people listen, but they don't, you know, often get back, and, you know, we hear negative. I don't really hear negative, actually, now that I think about it. But I'd just be curious. Anything
people
you hear
like
along
to complain.
The way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me some good news.
Well, I mean, they're lucky because it's a lot of free information that's based on years of research and, you know.
Well, let's talk about your books and anything you've done in your contact. And then get out of here. We'll do it next week. So let's get the contact.
So I'm on Facebook, Dorothy Diana. I'm primarily a nurse and a somatic movement guide for women to decrease body shame, increase fiery feminine energy, manifestation energy, moving through life feeling amazing. This is my fun. This is my playtime. I'm a sexual educator. And I have a website, www.yoniyun.com, Y-O-N-I-Y-U-N. And I do privates as well as group classes. And that's about it. So anyway, have a lovely week, and I'll see you next week.
That's enough. That's enough to keep anybody busy. Yeah, congratulations on all that. Do you have a book yet? Have you written your book? Everybody has to write one.
It's in process.
Well, good.
It's a work in progress. I feel like I think a few things need to settle after this past year. And that is, several chapters have been written. And I think I'm going to have to divide it up at this point, because there's so much
content. Two books, a before and after?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so much to discuss. This topic is so far reaching. Okay, so yes, look for that. That'll be fun.
Thanks, Greg. Dorothy. You're very welcome.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Right. Bye now. All right, I got stuff to play. I got things to do tomorrow. We got a crazy time. It's going to be interesting. There's a lot going on this week. The indictment, arraignment, and all kinds of things tomorrow. Trump's going to be addressing the nation tomorrow night. I have an incredible guest Thursday with Ed Dowd. And the rest of the week, I don't know yet. It's just, and I want to fix that bill that Jonathan talked about, our jury instruction bill. Yeah, that's going to be key. And I'll get that for next week. And of course, I love talking to Dorothy, because, you know, like I say, I never get ahead. I don't have a chat like that, you know, much during the week, simply because she's such an expert on this stuff. It's really fun to talk to her. I'm going to play a couple of things. I'm going to play a couple of our usual promotions here. Don't forget our discount code WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, on our various products that we're offering here. And then our classical musical selection will send us out. I'm back tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Central Time. And so our websites, again, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction for here for this show. WriteYourLaws.com, WriteYourLaws, WriteYourLaws.com is our legislative site. My Substack, GregPenglis.substack.com, and our contribution site, GiveSendGo.com/ActionRadio. Back tomorrow. From addiction to achievement. That is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well, so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. It looks like we got a storm coming, so I'm glad we got the show in before all hell breaks loose out there. Talk to you tomorrow. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elba Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.